Around Comics, Episode 49.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, a weekly roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the co-host of Around Comics, Mr. Brian Salazar.
Yes, it's me, I'm back.
And our resident voice of reason, the Around Comics regular, Mr. Tom Caters.
I got a bad case of the Vegas throat.
The Vegas throat?
That's what happens is... You know, you're out there and you perform every night, and then the desert, it's dry.
Okay, Elvis.
Yeah. At least you don't have a bad case of the whiskey dick.
The whiskey.
Oh, God. Hello to everyone out there. We'll be talking with our guest, Jimmy Palmiotti, in just a couple minutes. But first, I'd like to let everyone know that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by Tomorrow's Publishing.
Tomorrow's Publishing is bringing new life to comics fandom with magazines such as The Jack Kirby Collector, Back Issue, and Alter Ego. And how-to mags like Draw, Right Now, and our newest edition, Rough Stuff, celebrating the art of creating comics. Learn all facets of comics history from our comprehensive line of companion books, focusing on your favorite comics of all time. And don't miss the top-selling Modern Masters series, spotlighting the lives and careers of Bruce Timm, Arthur Adams, John Byrne, Mike Waringo, and others. Ask for them at your local comic shop or visit www.tomorrows.com to learn more.
Thank you. They put out fantastic. They're companion books. They have a All-Star companion for the JSA, and they have a Justice League companion. I have both of them, and they're great. They have a Superman one, which is
the only thing about their books is that they're so packed with stuff. They're
it'll take you forever to read through those books.
I have one. I think it was a back issue, or no, it was Comic Artist, and it was Howard Chaykin, and it's like a 12-page interview with Howard Chaykin, like everything you could possibly imagine you'd want to know about the guy, and just and then all these other great articles. But I really like the Right Now books and the Draw.
Alter Ego books. And Back Issue are two that I always get. But I just picked up the Rough Stuff, and if you are an artist or an art fan and want to see just the pencil versions of stuff. Absolutely freaking amazing. So anything,
it's worth your money. If they do a book about something you like, you will not... If you like Superman, pick up the Krypton Companion. You will not be disappointed in any way. Yeah, I mean, that's...
Tomorrow's
Tom Cater's seal of approval.
All right. Well, everyone, Around Comics is recorded every Friday from 7 to 9 at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area,
I'm a little disappointed. Nobody showed up today.
Yeah.
This is like the first time in weeks.
We had a few people drop by earlier.
Oh, did we? Did they just not pay attention?
Yeah, Mike Yusko was here.
Yusko is always here. and Matt owns the place. That doesn't count.
Yeah, a few people bumping around. So, and then the night is young.
Don't ruin the
It's
illusion.
Not over yet.
Sorry.
Speaking of Dark Tower.
Cameron Diaz was here earlier.
One of dancing girls. Dark Tower, Word Balloon, and Around Comics are proud to announce the Chicago Minicon on October 14th. That's this Saturday, folks.
Can we really call it a mini-con anymore? There's like 1,200 people.
I'm not going to call it the Maxi-con. That's stupid.
It's like the,
Maxi-con. Just a con. Chicago-con.
Chicago
let's call it Wizard World Chicago.
Two.
With two Z's.
From 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock, we will welcome some of Chicagoland's best and brightest for a signing at Dark Tower. You can meet Bill Reinhold, Francesco, Mike Oliveri, Dave Wachter, Mike Huddleston, Scott Johnson, Jason Malay, Rafael Nieves, Andrew Peepoy, Tom Kelly, Len Cody, Doug Klauba, Aaron Shapps, Mike Beasley, Jim McKern, Tim Seeley, Scotty Young, Greg Titus, and more.
Jesus Christ.
It's like every day he comes to me, hey, we got so-and-so to come to the con. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like... Good God, I just stood in line for a sketch from him at Wizard World. What the hell, you know?
You won't have to stand in line.
That's right.
That's right. Mark your calendar and come into Dark Tower on October 14th for signing, sketches, door prizes. A huge sale, right, Mark? Huge sale?
Gigantic
sale.
They're calling it the Leviathan that's sale. Big, the Leviathan.
Door prizes and be witness to, yes, the live recording of our 50th episode.
Woo! Are we going to keep it under 3 hours?
That is, if this show doesn't go, you know, 4 hours long, and we have to cut it into two. Like last week, I had to actually rename the whole damn shows just so we didn't fuck up the 50th episode.
But it's so good at interviewing people, it wouldn't be a problem. High five!
Hey, woo! It's all you, Tom. All
right, September contest. It's all over. It's all over.
Yes.
We have a winner.
Yeah.
Paper cut.
Wasn't me.
Dan Papercut. He won. He
surprised. Tenacity pays off.
He proved that he's the biggest geek that we know. He knows more.
Much about the Phantom.
He knows the most about mid-90s Spider-Man questions.
Really?
We don't have a new contest yet, do we? We're working on one that's very, very cool. Yeah, but it's going to be... We don't know when we're going to be able to announce it, but it'll be a quick one. You'll be able to...
I tell you what, let's announce it during our 50th episode.
Wow.
All right.
Here we go.
All right. So, Dan, paper cut on the forum, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone.
What did he win?
Mark, are you ready to send his prize pack out?
$25 worth of...
How many quarter pounds?
$25. That is 100...
A lot.
A lot of quarter. Well, there aren't that many good ones. I already picked them over.
What do you want?
Wonder Woman. A bunch of issues of Wonder Woman.
So yes, Mark is furiously putting together your prize pack. The hotline
1-888-65-GCAST. Call us. Leave a message. Like my radio voice. I'm working on that. I'm going to talk like this from now on.
And actually, we actually have five hotlines, but we're going to play one now, and then the other ones at the end of the show. So here's our first one. This is from Chip, Weak Rocker on the
Chip.
Forum.
Oh, jeez.
Chip in Rockford.
Wacky.
No.
Hello, Chris, Sal, Tom. This is Chip, Weak Rocker on the forums. I'm just calling to say I've been enjoying the show a lot lately. And to remind Sal that I want my frickin' preacher sketch that you promised me that you're never going to do.
Wow.
Obviously. Because, yeah. Anyways, I could get a free mouse card sketch from David Peterson, but yeah, for some reason I cannot get a free preacher sketch from Sal. I feel awful. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you later. Bye bye.
It's like American Splendor number 3. We just got like a preview.
I do owe him a preacher's guy. I'm not a good artist. I don't know why he wants a sketch for me.
It's like asking me to do a sketch. Well, no, you're better than I am. It's like
it's not much better.
Chip is such a nice guy. Come on.
Oh, I'm gonna do it. It's embarrassing. I'm not an artist. I'm not going
to... His problem isn't that he is like, I can't be bothered to do the sketch for him. It's that he has to give it to someone, so it has to match a certain expectation.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, I'm not going to send him a crappy sketch, so now I have to sit down and like actually try and make it good, which I don't really have the ability to do.
He's changed his level of expectation. He now expects you never to do it. So if you give him
anything.
Paper, yeah, exactly.
Well, that was my plan.
Just lightbox it. Do a Greg Land.
I'll do a Greg Land. There we go.
Oh, God.
Nice.
Tom, as
Vince B. I want to remind everyone, for the full Around Comics experience, you need to go to the website and find Brian Bowles' absolutely fantastic webcomic, Long Box of Love. He custom creates these for every episode, and each one is great.
He didn't send me for this one.
I think he's working on it.
Oh.
He had some great ideas, so it should be right. The Greg Araka one was awesome.
Yeah, and Greg liked it.
Greg liked it also.
He laughed at it.
So you should too.
Yes. Frapper. Sal, we've got people going
on
the Frapper
map. Oh, yeah, we have more
Frapper
people.
From all over the world.
From all over the goddamn world.
Well, just to give you a taste, some of our newest Frapper peoples. Matt, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, in case you were wondering where Toronto is. Jordan in Jernigan, Osceola.
Osceola.
Osceola. Is that Arkansas?
Yes.
David Green Worcester. Worcester?
Worcester.
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 Oh, David Green in Worcester, England.
Worcester.
Mr. Beefhead, Mr. Aurora.
Mr. Beefhead in Aurora, Colorado. Hello, Mr. Beefhead. Lee Whittlebank. Windbank? Wine?
Winebank.
How do you know that?
I'm guessing. Oh, better than you.
Portsmouth, England.
Mm-hmm. Stephanie.
Stephanie McCray, Austin, McCray. Texas. Dominic Harmon, Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. We're huge in Victoria, Melbourne.
We are so going to Victoria, Australia.
We're
going to
have
tour stop.
I just imagine that all the women there look like the girl from
Chip
Lost.
Chip in Rockford.
But I don't know if that's right.
He should just come and
see us. Rockford, and that's Chip.
He can stay at my apartment.
Kwan in Bangkok.
Hey, Kwan.
It's good to see we're making headway in a non-English-speaking country.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I wonder if they know what we're saying.
I'm calling anyone in Africa. Join the Frapper because
Africa.
You know, hey, we need another continent. We're like playing. It's a
risk,
round comic
it's
risk.
Risk.
Yeah.
I want.
We had a Tokyo. We had a Tokyo last week.
Antarctica to
what?
Sign up for Frapper. We have people yelling at us that you can't hear, which is why I just said stuff like, "I want someone in South."
We're big
Africa.
In England and we're big in Australia so
yeah,
far.
Victoria, Australia.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. That's pretty Sydney. Wild
Tokyo.
That somebody in Australia knows my fake Chechnya. Radio name.
Mm-hmm.
Fake radio.
All right, everyone, please spread the Around Comics love. We have a new flyer for the Listener LCS Challenge. Actually, our co-host, producer, webmaster extraordinaire, Brian Salazar, designed a new ad and flyer for us, and it's great. So check that out. You can also vote for us at Podcast Alley or leave us an iTunes music review. I actually was...
You know, we had some really good ones lately.
You know, Tom, the funny thing about Chris is you talk to him like he's a normal human being, yet he doesn't... And he acts like he listens... But then he ignores everything you talk to him about. It's amazing. It's like we had this big discussion the other day about we were going to move because our intros have become so long. We were going to move a bunch of the announcements to the after the main interview before the news. And yet here I am listening to every fucking announcement that he does every other week.
I went real quick though.
No, you didn't. It's been 12
Here's
minutes
the
now.
Thing.
Just like
that. You guys, all shut up.
Guys, let's talk about all the announcements. Before we get to the interview. Let's just really
I have one other announcement. One other announcement.
You don't get any more announcements.
Yes.
Your announcement.
No, it's an important announcement.
What? Go meet you at fucking 24-hour comic book day and
No, but I will be there tomorrow.
Yeah. That would have been an awesome segue.
Yeah, it would have.
Too bad that wasn't
No, but a big congratulations to not one but two of our podcasting brethren, Indie Spinner Rack and the Crankcast Podcast, celebrated their first year anniversaries in the last week. So congratulations to both those guys.
Cheers, gentlemen.
Yes.
Welcome to
Thank
a life
you.
Of no life.
Thank you for wasting that much of your time.
Yes. And for anyone that listens to us that doesn't listen to Indie Spinner Rack or Crankcast, shame on you. They're great casts. Go check them out. All right,
but,
guys.
But not at the expense of listening to us.
Yes, but never.
You should listen to our show twice.
Listen
it's
to them
you
after.
Never listen to anyone else's.
All right, guys.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Crossing genres and...
One of us.
Sure. Crossing genres and spinning great tales have become trademarks of the writing team of Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. Whether it's gunfights in the Old West, superhero stories from a different perspective, or funky 70s-like action romps, there's something for just about every comic fan in their work. Around Comics welcomes Jimmy Palmiotti to the roundtable.
How you doing?
Good. How's New York? Are you in New York?
New York's a little cold and windy tonight, but I'll change all that by going to Florida tomorrow morning.
Oh, nice.
Oh, lucky son of a bitch.
The jet set comic book lifestyle.
Yeah, jet setting from New York to Tampa.
Yeah, it's the rock and roll comic book lifestyle.
And Paris the next day.
Well, we were supposed to have your partner on tonight also, Justin, but he couldn't make it. He had some previous commitments, and some relatives came into town, I think, so he couldn't join us, but... I think we'd like to get to know you and certainly get to know how you guys started this partnership together.
Well, Justin was our intern at Marvel Knights when Joe Quesada and I were changing that company around for a couple of years. We were Justin was one of our interns, and we became good friends. And when he left there, we stayed friends. And while he was working for us, he kind of was one of those guys that every day he came in with another pitch. Like, you know what I would do with Black Panther? You know what I would do with pretty much what you guys do on a Friday night? But he would like make sure I heard it every day. And eventually when I left Marvel Knights, I started getting offers to, you know, write some books, and I figured, well, the guy's brilliant. Let me see if he feels like working with me. And we had the ex-editor-in-chief, Bob Harris, get a job at Wildstorm editing three books, and we pitched him two of them. We pitched 21 Down and The Resistance, and he liked both of them. And we kind of got lucky, and we started working together from there. And, like, we're best friends, so it's really easy. Like, we'll get together, and we'll just, you know, work a whole afternoon, and then we'll grab something to eat and hang out. And it's like anything in life, if you have somebody else to do it with, it becomes less work-like, you know. But he's a brilliant guy. I mean, you know, I definitely am a world traveler, but he's like a very worldly guy. Like, he's done every kind of job in the world. He's also an excellent, he's a chef, and he's also castrated bulls.
Jesus.
He's worked on a, you know, on a farm, and he's also dug for dinosaur bones, and, you know, the guy's done everything.
He's giant.
And it's really good to work with somebody who pretty much knows a little bit about everything.
So did he ever prove any of this, or do you think it was just BS?
Well, I haven't seen him digging for bones lately. Let's see.
Do you have the actual...
You know, the chef thing, he's always cooking. So I know his wife, you know, I know he cooks, and she comes home from her regular job, and he loves to cook, so... And he definitely has his comments when something doesn't taste well. He really hasn't proven much to me except for the skill, the writing skills. And basically, that's all I care about. I could care if he can cook. I still want to go out and eat, you know? Yeah. The last thing I want to sit is in a kitchen and have Justin cook for me. I just can't think of anything more bizarre or weird. You know, it's just knowing him, it just, and myself, it would be a very strange picture.
Next, he'd want to draw you a bath.
Yeah, next it would be a bath, then it would be a massage. Oh, I have this pain in my shoulder. Next thing you know, I'll be biting pillow and, you know, changing my name.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you guys have done quite a bit of work together now, and is what's that process like as far as, you know, do you sit down and both work on, you know, separate parts of a script? Do you plot and he fills in dialogue? What's the process like of co-writing the books?
For us, we pretty much get together and we look at what we have to cover for the day. So the other day we had two things we had to cover. One was an issue of, I think it was the second issue of Terra, and then we had to also work on, we're working on an animated cartoon. I can't announce it yet, but we're writing 9 episodes of something for Nickelodeon.
Cool.
And we looked at what we had to do, and then we're like, okay, let's grab the first one, and we just talk over. We just sit there and talk over what do we need to get done in this issue, how do we need to begin it, how do we end it, what things do we need to get to the reader so they understand, so they're not lost. And then once we have a good, pretty good grasp of it, most of the time he'll sit down at the computer because I can't sit still, and we'll just dictate, we'll just talk out loud each page, breakdown of each page, and we'll either argue it or we'll both be in sync or we'll both have a perspective. And when you work together, you eventually, you know, you have to be able, you have to be humble. You have to recognize when something's better than your idea. And we're both really good at that. We have no real egos. Anybody that met us can tell you that. We really have no egos for anything. Obviously, you can tell by the way Wizard covers us every month. that's a joke. We haven't been in Wizard yet.
I was going to say, you've been in the top 10 how many months in a row now?
Number 11 since 1976. No, we've never had a feature done on us, ever. So, you know, but you can read the 9th or the 100th Jeff Loeb story every month. we kind of lay low and work, you know. I think there's a time when you want to go out there and make a lot of noise. We'd rather the work make the noise.
Well, you might end up writing Wizard at some point. You're writing so much stuff.
No, I'm just jealous, you know. They keep calling Jeff Loeb and not us. That's pretty much what it comes down to.
Well, you know, there are some definite success stories in the stuff that you guys have done. Jonah Hex is kind of a book that just appeared out there, and... It's kind of become, it's beyond a cult hit, and it definitely has a following now, and I don't know if that was expected.
Well, you know, he's a great character, Jonah Hex is the coolest character. I grew up with the character, and I've always loved it. And you know, we kind of broke our curse because we haven't done any book past 12 issues, like any series started any series past 12. Like Monolith went to 12, 21 Down went to 12. You know what I mean? So when 13 of Jonah Hex hits, we're gonna go out drinking because it's the first time we've had that happen. And I think this is a case where we actually gave the people exactly what they wanted. And we got lucky, and again the time was right, and you know the Civil War books and all these big crossovers are great, but you know we're the only book that really has the original Civil War featured, you know, and we're actually coming out on time, so that's got to count for something.
There you go.
I think people really like the character, and you know we grew up with like Dirty Harry and. You know, these kind of, the Western, the cool Clint Eastwood, Dirty Harry kind of, you know, the anti-hero stuff. And I just think that, you know, where the Punisher sometimes gets a little repetitive, I guess, because the backdrop is someplace we actually live, you know, like the cities or the towns and everything. I think Jonah Hex, you know, the Western kind of opens up the imagination a little bit more. And I hope the numbers stay, you know, where they are. We're always trying to get them up a little bit because they kind of go down tiny bit each month. And we don't think it's for lack of people looking for it. I just think it's retailers have to order other books more.
Do you think that with the trade coming out that you're going to get a new influx of readers that may be held off for the trade?
I hope so. I mean, we've been monitoring it on Amazon, and some of the booksellers and Publishers Weekly gave us like a fantastic review. So I have to hope that like out of that, like the 100,000 people that get Publishers Weekly, I'm hoping like at least 3 people went out and bought it. You know, and that's all you can hope for is like a couple. You know, but word of mouth is everything in this business. And again, it's the retailers that have to get behind us. You know, it's the fans can ask for it, and well, if they don't see the book, they won't. It's not in their face. You know, so things sell out. They underorder it, whatever it may be. But we have a steady around 20-something thousand people, and we're hoping to get it up a little bit with the Jordy Brunet three-parter. It's our first multi-part story. Mm-hmm.
That brings me to a question about the decision to make each issue a standalone story. What brought you to that decision to do that?
Well, it came out of, you know, a lot of it comes out of frustration, too, because I don't like to spend a lot of money on comics. You know, I buy everything. I buy music, video games, everything. So I'm not a big fan of 9-part stories or getting a comic and it's so deconstructed that I feel like I've read it in 2 minutes. And Justin and I are both on the same boat. It's like there's no reason why you can't tell a full story in 22 pages. It's really, I mean, if you look at Scrubs on TV, that's 22 minutes and there's like 9 storylines running through it. You know, and there's no reason we can't do that with comics. So when we got Hex, we figured this is the best place to do it because people are used to reading the one-off stories in Hex in the 70s. Let's try it again and see how it's received. And, you know, 90% of the feedback has been great. 10% of the people say they want a bigger story. They want more going on. So we do get people complaining, but, you know, you try to give this three-parter will make them happy. But at the same time, the way we wrote the three-parter, it actually begins and ends each issue. Well, so we kind of tried to be as clever as we could with it.
I just finished reading the trade, and I really enjoyed it. And I wouldn't consider myself someone who was very excited about a Western book. And I was just curious as to whether going into writing a book like that is... Are you conscious of the fact that a lot of comic book fans will accept sort of cliches within superheroes, but if you tell them it's a Western or a war book... People kind of roll their eyes a little bit.
To win them over, it's like anything. I'm sure Deadwood, when they first pitched it on HBO, everybody was going, oh, come on. Everybody knows Westerns. Nobody watches Westerns, you know. You're going to always get that. And I'm too much of an idiot to know when to stop, so I'll keep pushing ahead. When we first got the gig, I said, you know, we need to research this beyond... above and beyond, because we're both New Yorkers somewhat, and writing about the Old West, and everyone's going to be looking for us to screw up on this one, you know? Everyone's going to go, oh, these guys can't write it. You got to get, you know, this guy who lives with his sister, you know, somewhere. You know what I mean? We had to get authentic cowboys to write this or whatever. So we kind of had a lot to prove on this book, and we kind of handled it a little different than the other books. I mean, nothing we're writing is the same. You know, Daughters of the Dragon and Hex and Terra and Friday the 13th, they couldn't be further apart as far as genre and the way we're approaching it, including Freedom Fighters as well, you know? So it's a risky thing, and you're always going to have people. Look, some people, a lot of people, I'm sure, have not read the book yet. The best thing I can do is tell them they can pick up any issue, and if they like it, great. If they don't, then, you know, put it back on the rack. I should read it in the comic store. I don't care.
The first two pages, of the first scene where, of the first issue, where it's just all the money floating around and the two guys facing each other, and I was, like, hooked right away. I was just like, oh, wow, this is really interesting. And it kind of blew my expectations.
Yeah, and he smothers a kid at the end of the book. You know, it's really funny because somebody reviewed the first issue online, and they, like, made, like, 8 comments against the book. They ripped a new hole, and they made these comments about the book, and I wrote the guy a letter because I usually don't bother, but I said, can you do me a favor and go back and actually read the book this time? Because the things you said that didn't happen, they're there between the panels. You just have to fill them in. You have to actually read the book.
So you read Sal's review.
It wasn't my review.
By the way, Sal, thanks for that.
No, no. I'm going to actually read a review of the trade because I really liked it.
Well, thank you.
You know, it's funny because when the book first came out, I didn't pick it up. And it wasn't – I had never read Jonah Hex before. My only impression of the character – was from the Hex series back in whatever it
olden
was.
Olden days.
No, well, it wasn't that long ago, but when he was in
the future?
Well, yeah, when he's like in space or whatever, you know, he's in the future. And
that's sort of like, you know, the weird cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you don't want to bring out to your friends, you know.
He's up in the attic.
Do you think that had any effect on the book at all? Because like I said, I didn't even realize it was a Western until later on after the series had been out a little while.
Yeah, well, I guess, Sal, I mean, I'm going to have to guess at your age now. I'm guessing you're probably, like, in your early 30s or late 20s?
Mid-30s. I'm 35.
35. Okay, so, yeah, you were buying comics when the last issues, when the Sci-Fi Hex was coming out. You know, it's funny because we originally pitched this series with Mark Texera, who drew that, the Sci-Fi series, and he got the job, but... a week into the book, he said, if there's any way we can not write too many stories with horses in it, he would appreciate it, because he can't draw horses. And
he just walks everywhere.
I swear to God. And I just went, Mark, are you kidding me?
It's a Western.
And he's like, no, I don't like drawing horses. And I'm like, you know what, maybe you shouldn't be doing this book.
So whenever he went to Ghost Rider, did he say, you know, as long as there's no motorcycles, I'm cool?
Right, well, you see, Ghost Rider, he's fine with. Yeah, just as long as there's no skulls, or even flaming skulls, it'll be fine. But, no, you know, we're always going to have somebody that didn't read it, or didn't pick it up, or they heard the good reviews and wanted to, but never did. And, you know, and again, it's hard, like, I know I can't buy certain books on issue 5. Well, even, I'll tell you the truth, even issue 2, if I miss the first issue, I'm like, you know, the hell with this series. Or like I just did with Heroes on TV. I missed the first episode and the second one was on. I'm like, I guess I'll watch it one day on DVD. So I understand that thinking, but I think, in the way, hopefully someday a copy falls in their lap and they read it. Really, what can you do besides just make noise about it and get pretty good reviews on it? You really can't do anything, and there's so many comics out. It's just, you know, it's boggling. I mean, every Wednesday you go in that store, there's hundreds of new books.
Right. Yeah. It's,
you know, I don't really know how to get people to buy your stuff except write a giant Civil War on it or something, you know. And it's always funny because we make fun of, you know, like the really popular books, but that's what people want.
Well,
people tend to make fun of the thing they want the most.
Sure. Well, it was really funny because I love DC's marketing promotion for Jonah Hex. It is straight out of Civil War, Jonah Hex. And,
yeah.
You know, it's, and I thought that was...
We ran into that because we actually, the guys at DC thought of that because some guy on was posting on one of the comic sites, and, you know, after his comments, he put a little banner and it said, Jonah Hex, the original Civil War. And we were all laughing at that, and then that's where they came up with the idea. So some fan inspired that. And, you know, look, even if it gets the copies, even if it gets another 1,000 copies out there, that's great. And for us, that's great. We're not a book that DC expects to sell tons. They just expect it to stay at a healthy number so we can keep going. And DiDio's really good. I mean, Dan DiDio literally said, you know, as long as I'm here, I'm going to try to keep this book out.
I'm Ed Brubaker, and when I'm not killing Foggy Nelson, I like to accidentally delete off my desktop the Around Comics podcast.
Well, you've kind of, I mean, you and Justin have had a bit of a history of sort of smaller, really good books that have had a hard time finding, you know, getting in people's hands. I mean, from The Resistance to 21 Down to Twilight Experiment, which I thought was a great book.
Really like that.
Is there...
Well, that's three guys that read it. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's... What is it about, you know, those books, even though they were in Wildstorm, and, you know, your names are obviously known now, but why is it that we have such a hard time getting good quality books?
It has a lot to do with a couple of things. Number one, what does Jimmy Palmiotti do? Well, he's an inker.
Right.
Okay, so right away, you know, my years of inking, people forgot that, we did Event Comics and created a bunch of characters. We did Marvel Knights. You know, it's sort of like preconceptions of things, you know, because Justin's coming out of left field. You know, nobody really knew who he was, but I had a name already, but they didn't even know what the hell. I confuse people, but I firmly believe, and you guys, I'm sure you back me up on this, when you do something in life, you should try to do a lot of things, not just one thing. Mm-hmm. And I guess because, I don't know why, like, we have to go out and do our own press. Like, 21 Down, to me, is still one of my, and Monolith. I mean, Monolith is one of my favorite books that I've written, and I still think it stands up. I think we just didn't give the people what they want with the books. I think we just kept writing what we thought was cool. You know, even when we got on Hawkman, you know, we just kind of said, you know what, we're going to do what we think it should be. And I think, you know, eventually either they catch on or they don't. And believe me, a lot of stuff didn't, you know. By the word it canceled usually means, okay, it didn't. but we're too stupid to kind of stop that and just get on like a Batman or an X-Men, you know.
Well, one of the things that you guys do, you don't seem to flinch at genre hopping, and you'll go from westerns to superheroes to, you know, action, you know, straight out, you know, 70s action stuff. It's really interesting. You know, I can imagine a writing team that would say, okay, we're good at crime noir. That's what we're going to write. But to have a writing team that jumps around so many genres, how do you guys manage that?
Well, you know, we're huge, like any comic book fan, we're huge movie buffs. We read to the point of exhaustion. I mean, I literally had to donate like 11,000 books to the Board of Ed recently. You know, we read like crazy people, and we consume. And I think, you know, it's so funny how most of the top 100 books are superhero books, but the genre books are hardly there, and nobody was offering us any of the superhero stuff. You know, we kept pitching all these bizarre things. I mean, I got to tell you, you know, at one point, like, DC was like, we need, like, a Hulk-type character. And we came up with a Monolith. And I think by the fifth issue, they were like, what the hell is this book? You know, they were like, it's not the Hulk. And I'm like, well, no, you see, there's a little bit of depression out in New York involved with, and there's this Jewish girl and a junkie that used to be a hooker. And, you know, and all of a sudden, it became something else. But I think, in a way, for any writer, I think anybody who wants to do it, they're like, you just have to do what you enjoy. You write, you kind of try to write what you enjoy. I enjoy the genre stuff, and it's funny because Justin and I just stuck by our guns with some. I mean, look, we put out a book called Cloudburst through Image that literally sold like 3,000 copies. You know, it was a sci-fi book, total sci-fi. About these guys that stole this weather thing that can change planets and make them, you know, like Earth, you know, terra firma type stuff. And, you know what, I guess the thing is, there's so many great comic book writers. There's so many superhero writers like Mark Waid, Jeff Johns, you know, Jeff Loeb. All these guys are really, really great at superheroes. And then you got, like, the Warren Ellis's and the Garths, and that are good at their quirky stuff, you know, and I just felt like where do we fit in? You know, where are we going to fit in? And we don't know, so we started pitching, you know, stuff that nobody was doing, like Westerns, or even something like Daughters of the Dragon. It was just like, oh, we can do that. You know, we can do throw in a little Kill Bill, get, you know, shake out the 70s clothing, and then, like, make it modern day at the same time, you know? So I think you just experiment and see what sticks. We're not afraid to fail miserably, and that's what it comes down to. Thank you, by the way, for Bloodhaven. But we're not, you know, Bloodhaven, our bestseller, was also our least favorite book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So it doesn't, it really, our careers are just pretty much like, well, let's just keep working. Let's not worry about where it lays or how it sells. Let's just keep working till the point where they boot us up and get onto something else. And genre stuff is infinitely more interesting to write, I think, than being another X-Men guy. To writing another story. Hey, I got this great Wolverine story.
Oh, really?
You know?
Oh, okay. Tom got excited for a second.
Well, you know, actually, we did do Claws, so what the hell am I talking about?
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't you doing a Wolverine book right now?
One of the things I'm kind of excited by is I see a lot more in comics. There seems to be a trend, at least from what I can see, towards there being more openness towards genres. Even a company like DC is putting out a book like Tales of the Unexpected, and they're doing
Machine
Space. And there seems to be it seems to be moving a little bit towards where people are opening up to the idea of genre books.
I hope so, but you know, do you notice when they do that, though, it's always about existing titles? Like, if we launched a Western that wasn't Jonah Hex, like Brian Azzarello's.
Yeah, Loveless.
Yeah,
okay, right, Loveless. I mean, if it wasn't in the Vertigo realm, it would be a hard sell for any company to keep it going. I mean, Loveless does well. Granted, we both, like, Loveless and Hex came out of the ranch at the same time, and we're both supporting each other. But it's hard to sell anything new. And genre stuff, they have to make it mystery in space, or they have to make it this and that, because to just come out with something brand new, it's tough. It's really, really really, really tough.
It's interesting. Criminal came out this week, which is Ed Brubaker's and Sean Phillips' new crime noir book. And I don't know if you call it noir, just their crime book. And we had someone on our forum post that they weren't going to pick it up because they're already buying three other crime books. And so I was like, oh, wow, you know, that genre is actually starting to get a lot of play in comics, which I like because I like crime books.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great. I think, you know what? We've been overwhelmed with so many things in the world right now that we do have to pick and choose our favorites. I don't think anybody anymore should buy any one company and buy everything they do. You know, I think those days are way, way over. And the genre stuff, you know what I like about the genre stuff? The genre stuff, you can get, like, extremely violent or sexy or over the top or crazy. You know, I wish one day they'll let us write comics where we can actually include a CD with the soundtrack, because both Justin and I hear music while we're writing this stuff, you know. I just think that even in movies, you look where Tarantino's going with Grindhouse and, you know, Kill Bill and all that stuff. It seems like the genre stuff is just becoming a little more respectable. And we got a lot of good guys to thank for that, you know. And we're just, you know, like I said, we both feel like we're just starting out, Justin and I, in a way, with our stuff. And, again, we still haven't had that big hit yet, you know?
Well, I think with a lot of the genre stuff, I mean, for me personally, like 10, 15 years ago, there wasn't that many comics, period, that I could get that excited about. But this past week, I bought like 13 books from all different types of publishers and everything. This was one of the better weeks I can remember for comic books, where I was like, wow, every single thing I read was actually really good. And it had a crime book, and it had
a war book.
A war book. And
there was
two books about shrinking superheroes that were actually, you know, like there's all this stuff that I think for a long time we kind of lost a little bit. And this week I was just kind of struck by how much I was like, wow, there's all this stuff out there, and it's all really good, and it was really
And why do we want it so much? Because we have been put through the mill with Civil War and Crisis and this and that. We've seen the superheroes beat each other up a million times. We've seen the crossover where everything is going crazy, and then at the end, all of a sudden, there's a guy that goes, well, we'll bring it all back to the way it was before. And those 90 books you just read mean nothing. You know, we've seen this kind of stuff done in reboots of stuff many, 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 many times. So a genre book might offer you something new. You know, personally, I mean, like, Daughters of the Dragon, people loved it, but boy, it did not sell.
It was, you know? it was a big hit in our shop. Actually, Mark, our manager here at Dark Tower, said, you've got to pick up this book. And so it was pushed in this store. But
Well, I appreciate it, you know, and we're hoping the trade book gets picked up. Like I said, on Amazon, I checked the numbers and stuff. But when it came out, I mean, I literally had people saying, you know, yeah, it just doesn't sell. You know, Marvel was like, you know, we'll keep it going until you finish it. But you know, you got to come up with something else, and Heroes for Hire was something else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's funny how also things happen and then people go back and buy it. Like, I think the trade will do better than the comic ever did.
Did Marvel, I didn't look in the first issue of Heroes for Hire, which I liked, by the way, but did Marvel put any sort of ad in there? It's like, you like this, go back and buy Daughters of the Dragon trade paperback now available.
No, let's see. I have the book right here. Let's see what the ads are inside it.
Well, there's an SUV.
Well, there's a Dodge ad with the Hulk holding a car.
Yeah, I've seen that one a few times.
Do you know the Rush City one?
I don't think they did. You know, I probably have been told not to talk about Daughters of the Dragon while talking about Heroes for Hire because,
really,
you know, what they looked at Daughters as was something that didn't work, and, you know, Heroes is being looked at as something that does work.
Well, they need to figure out the difference.
Heroes for Hire comes out of the gate being one of the Civil War crossover books.
Well, they need to figure out the difference between doesn't work and overlooked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, what's that Warren Ellis book that really great one? It's a Marvel book.
Next Wave?
What's that?
Next Wave?
Yeah, Next Wave. See, I think that's brilliant, that book.
Oh, it's
I laugh out loud every time I get an issue with that. But I also hear, oh, it's not selling and this and that, and I'm just like, how can it not sell? It's Warren Ellis. And then I realize, well, it doesn't matter who the people are on some of these books. Mm-hmm. It's just that Fantastic Four will always sell.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man will always sell. X-Men will always sell. It's the odd ones that have to work a lot harder, well, I think, to get their fans. Now, Heroes for Hire, you know, it started out at 90,000. It's down to 60 or 70, but I'm really curious to see where issue 4, 5, and 6 goes. You know, no Civil War tie-in.
Yeah.
You know, because that's where the book will level out on. And again, it's another genre book. We're writing that like a genre book. We're writing it like just insane. You know, we have people getting beheaded, and there's a lot of crazy stuff coming. And even when we signed the exclusive at DC, we still had 8 issues.
Well, I know how to get those numbers up real quick. Just put Iron Fist and Luke Cage in it, and you'll be
there. You go.
What do I have to do?
Put Luke Cage and Iron Fist in it?
Oh, God.
Just kidding.
They wouldn't let us use them.
I think they're all spoken for now. I think Bendis has Luke Cage, and Brubaker and Matt Fraction put their claim on Iron Fist, and you got Misty Knight and Colleen.
Isn't it funny how every other book those characters can be guest stars in it? is it just me that's a little paranoid?
Iron Fist was in Doctor Strange this year.
There you go. I mean, you know, that sounds like a porno movie, by the way, you just described.
Doctor Strange invited Iron Fist over.
Well, you know, what we tried to do with the heroes is, besides making Misty and Colleen like the main characters, we really tried to give Humbug his
place
in the universe.
Well, you talk about
although there is some crazy stuff happening in the 6th or 7th issue, but you know, this is a book again that nobody, you know, we thought nobody was watching it, so we were kind of writing crazy stuff in it, and it really caught us off guard that it actually sold. We never expected this in a million years.
Well, I'll tell you what, I picked it up because, like I said, Mark here had kept telling me I had to read Daughters of the Dragon. And initially, I'm like, well, I don't know if that I'm really interested in Daughters of the Dragon. I don't really care about those characters and whatever. I wasn't really interested. Then I picked it up finally after it was complete. I picked up all the individual issues and read it, and I absolutely loved it. And then I'm like, okay, well, I have to get Heroes for Hire then from there. And I think maybe that had something to do with it because I did absolutely love Daughters of the Dragon. That was a fun, just a great book. I love the interaction between those two characters. And talk about a book that really should have a soundtrack, because the whole time I was reading it, it was like,
I just listened to Superfly while I was reading.
Yeah, it was like a great shaman.
Heroes for Hire. I mean, Daughters of the Dragon for us was like our pitch. Like, hey, do you need on NBC? Do you need a 1 hour comic book based TV show?
Uh-huh.
Then you should do Daughters of the Dragon. Like, that was our pitch for TV. You know, like, this can really work because you really don't need a big budget. You just need, you know, two hot girls and some madness going on, and, you know, we still believe that. I'm going to be sending the trade out to a channel just to get them interested. Not that I would get a dime from it, but I just like the idea that I think, you know, instead of another show where there's a crime and then they actually find clues and solve it, I think we need some other stuff on TV.
Sure, and I love the bail bond aspect of it. It was so fun. It's
yeah, like CSI, you know, Comic Shop.
I got to tell you, I watched this show the other night called The Nine.
Yeah.
Don't spoil it for me. I just taped that. I haven't watched it yet. Was it any good?
Well, I don't want to ruin it for you, but I thought it stunk.
Oh, well, it wouldn't be the first time a show sucked.
I was so disappointed. The critics are raving. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, they're raving idiots. I was so disappointed, and you know, I like Lost. I'm one of those guys. I love anything where I don't know what's coming. I do like Medium because it's well-written. But I also saw CSI, which is the one in Miami.
Miami.
CSI, yeah. Miami.
Is it called? That yes. was one of the worst
Very creative.
Shows I've ever watched.
Yeah, it's,
Did you see it?
Yeah.
I don't know what, my parents love it. You know why? Because it completely satisfies my dad's, like, my dad's not the most creative, like, individual, you know, like... It satisfies what he's looking for. He gets his entertainment, and it's solved, and it's done, and that's it.
That's all he needs.
That's all he needs.
The whole episode was about a guy who sold the line of jewelry, diamond jewelry, and they found out that he was selling glass diamonds.
Wow.
And I'm just, like, sitting there going, wait a minute, this guy made millions of dollars, not one person checked this jewelry or had it appraised.
But Jimmy, you're from New York. You think that way.
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, I have to, you know.
I just bought a 10-pound bag of diamonds. Oh, shit.
Yeah, I mean, I would, you know, I'm watching it. I'm going, oh, my God, that's the story? You know.
Well,
yeah,
it's like anything else.
Picky, man.
And we see it in comics, too, is that once there's a hit show like a Lost, mm-hmm. you're going to see 10, you know, rip-offs, and they're not going to be as good. They're going to be, you know, because they don't put in the time or their effort or the talent. And you see it in comics to some degree, too, once you have, you know.
Well, when does the Palmiotti Gray zombie book come out?
You know, the only, Billy Tucci and I have this joke that, you know, we always try to figure out how to zombie-proof our house a little better. Because we look at a house and I'm going, you know, he goes, it's not very zombie-proof. And I'm like, dude, glass windows, you can be put, that's a push-through, you know. And but the reality of it, I don't really have a zombie idea. The only thing is Amanda said to me, it'd be great if all the animals on Earth became zombies, just the animals.
Just the monkeys.
You know, because she's like, that's infinitely more interesting because you really can't, there is no rational thought. Just hungry animals trying to eat people is great because anything from, let's picture like killer squirrels to gerbils,
imagine
that, to 100,000 fang dachshunds,
you know, you're
chasing
gonna,
you down the street.
You're going to see that book like in 6 months come out of IDW.
Well, you know what it's going to be? It's going to be a scene with a guy like in a coliseum and he just fought a real lion and then he turns around and there's a zombie lion standing right behind him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there really isn't, it's been done to death. You know, some genres, they, you know, look, today I went to see the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the beginning, whatever the hell that was called.
Was it good?
I went to see that today. Here's a great opportunity to give us a ton of backstory. And really what they did is, I thought it was a little bit of a cop-out. It was fun, but I like a little nudity in my movies, especially if they're rated R, and it didn't satisfy that. Granted, it was bloody and there was some good scenes, but overall I thought, well, this is a great opportunity to build a lot of backstory. You know, because it's going to be the first time we see Leatherface, maybe as a kid, maybe dealing with the world and how, you know, and they kind of just cut through it, you know, to get back to the old, here's four more people pulling into the wrong town. You know, so I was a little bit disappointed by it.
Well, that's what I, when I saw the previews trailer for it, I'm like, well, it just looks like
the same thing from the first movie, which
yeah.
I'm a big sort of purist. I love the original, you know.
So do I. So do I. And you know, I mean, literally they should have told the original story and ended it with the beginning of the original, you know?
Right.
But I wasn't seeing, like, I saw the Hills Have Eyes, mm-hmm. and yeah. I was very satisfied with that.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I haven't
seen
that.
I saw that. It was pretty. The thing with, the, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which always bothers me, is that all the sequels and remakes, they never got why the first one is legitimately scary because
yeah.
it looks like it is just happening right in front of you.
Yeah, the sequels, they just keep making the chainsaw bigger.
And they keep making everything really like, I want a really beautiful scene with all this great framing, and it's
right.
like, that's not the point of that movie.
Well,
the point was that it could happen. And
right.
every time they make it fancy or cool looking, there's one scene in the movie where they focus on a chainsaw, and it's all shiny, and it's like souped up, you know, sort of like Ghost Rider's bike in a way. I can't explain it, but I saw it, and I was like, no, wrong. This chainsaw should be so rusty and disgusting. It should be something that's been sitting in the bottom of the garage, you know. But you know, like I said, The Hills Have Eyes to me was a much better remake because it actually was frightening at times, and it was the most disturbing, like, offing of a family I've seen in a long time. I don't want to ruin it if anybody didn't see it, but it was disturbing, and I was laughing, so that means it was good.
That must have been good.
Well, we were talking.
I mean, look, if you gotta go see anything, go see Jackass too.
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
You saw that?
The best
yeah.
thing out.
The Hills Have Eyes and Jackass. Where did this interview come
see,
off the
then
rails?
Go see Idiocracy to find out why you should feel bad about laughing at Jackass.
Have you seen?
Right, exactly.
Have you seen the show on the new show on Showtime called Dexter?
About the serial killer?
Yeah. Well, he's not.
I'm dying to see it, but I don't get Showtime. But I think they have, and I'll be a good plug for them. I think they have free Showtime this weekend. So they're going to run the first episode if people want to catch it.
Check it out. It was pretty interesting. He's a forensics scientist or a forensics officer who's also a serial killer, but he justifies his passion for killing people by killing quote unquote bad guys that get away from the legal system. And it's a pretty
yeah. You know, I hate to say it, but we had a thing called Exile that was pretty much the same thing, but not about a serial killer. It's about somebody else who actually would kill them, who understood them and killed them. And I'm kind of bummed because, you know, every time we come up with something, eventually if we don't get it out there, it comes out.
But you, sure but you guys come up thing. You guys come up with a new idea like every other day from what I hear.
Yeah.
So it's bound to happen.
Yeah.
It's the law of averages. Yeah.
I know. You know, it's like I want to, you know, look, I wish the dream world for me is somebody gives us a lot of money and lets us just put out crazy comics.
That's,
you know, like stuff that nobody else is doing.
Crazy
and
with a K.
If you had your choice to do TV, movies, or comics, what would you choose?
Comics.
Or video games, yeah.
Well, yeah, you know what? You want to do, when you're writing comics, you're hearing music, you know? Or you're seeing where the camera, especially me, I'm seeing where the camera is. And when I'm writing scripts, I'm kind of like describing the scene. So, you know, in a way, of course it has to be film. Because film can satisfy every part of that experience. You know, you have sound, you have, you know, actually you can see it. And so, you know, that kind of, you know, but it doesn't mean I want to do that for my living. It probably just means I want to try it.
Sure.
I'd like the opportunity to try everything before I make the decision. You know, comics are great, though. I mean, dude, you can write a book, then some guy draws it, and it's 100 times better than you even wrote it, and then it comes out, and it's so exciting. It's a thrill every week.
Well,
you've
kind of dabbled in it now, working with video games, notably The Punisher, which you scripted with Garth Ennis, and then you're working on another one with Garth for the Ghost Rider.
Yeah, the Ghost Rider. Yeah, I mean, and that's great too. You know, I love that I'm at a show and some kid who looks, you know, like he hasn't left his house in 3 years tells me he's been playing the video game for 2 months and he loves it, you know, and it's a kind of a cool thing to do. You know, this whole job is great. I really, there is no downside to it, except for the fact if you take things personally. You know, if you have thin skin, it's a tough business, maybe.
Sure.
You know, It's the only thing I've seen people, like, get really mental because they can't, because people, you know, hate their stuff, they review it badly, or they badmouth them, and, yeah, realistically, you have to have thick skin.
Can't wait until the next podcast? Be sure to check out AroundComics.com for breaking news, reviews, and opinions.
This is how cool Stan Lee is, okay? I'm in San Diego. Amanda and I get invited to this sci-fi party, which is just really just super beautiful roof of a hotel. You know, all the people from all the shows that are on sci-fi, everybody getting drunk, having a great time. And we look over on the couch, and there's Stan Lee on this bed-like couch, leaning over, talking into this blonde's ear. Now, the blonde was I'm forgetting her name. Lucy Lawless. That's who she was. Zena. I was going to say Zena, but yeah, it was Lucy Lawless. Stan was hitting on Lucy Lawless.
Nice.
Call me Mr. Fantastic.
And she was all, like, starry-eyed, looking at Stan, leaning into him. Well, I'm sure that was a giant Excelsior in his pants. Good boy, man. I mean, she looked great.
The ghost of Jack floats by.
And I wanted to go say hi to him the whole time, but he was just like, you know, working.
You didn't want to cock-block him, man.
absolutely. And I wouldn't do that. I mean, right. You know.
Hey, you got Amanda. Get the hell out of here.
All of a sudden, Stan Lee turns around.
Hey, Jimmy, it's great to see you. Isn't that boat calling you to go on? You know, he'd probably just kick my ass off the roof. But I thought that's cool. I mean, because what is he, like 80? I guess Stan's like 80.
He's somewhere, right? Yeah, 80-something.
Man, still doing it, though. Hey,
still doing it. Still talking to Zena. Whatever. She's on Battlestar Galactica. I don't know her name on Galactica. Does anybody know it?
She's the reporter on there.
No idea.
So. Great show, by the way.
And it's on tonight, right?
No, did it start tonight?
Oh, you just shattered his world. All
right, guys, I got to go. I'll see you later.
Click.
Yeah. Thank God for iTunes. Hey, we have a few forum questions here from posters at our site.
Okay.
Tom, you want to go?
Sure. First one is from John Sokol. Is that the first one?
John, it's from Dan.
Oh, first one's from Dan.
And the deal?
Yes.
Yeah, Dan DiDio.
Why aren't you working? No. Having just received and started reading the Daughters of the Dragon Samurai Bullets trade, I was wondering if they knew when they started Daughters that would run into Heroes for Hire series, or was that just a result of the success of the Daughters book?
We absolutely did not know it would run into it. As a matter of fact, maybe by the fourth issue, they told us that it was going to. And we actually were going to rework the issue 6, the ending, to tie into the Civil War, and then we decided at the last minute, no. I think people should just read it for what it is and not worry about what's going on afterwards. So we definitely did not know. I mean, we were glad they actually published 6 issues.
He's also very excited to hear about the Terra miniseries, a Palmiotti, Gray, and Connor production. How insane does it get with the three of you working on the same project?
Well, you know, out of the three of us, Amanda's the crazy one. So Justin and I, we usually go to his place and work, and then Amanda will pencil here and while she's watching TV. She does this. So her drawing board faces the wall, and on the wall is a mirror, and through the mirror she can see the TV over her shoulder. So she's, like, really crazy. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. It's we actually got to do for the first time where we said, here's a scene where Terra is, like, hanging out with people, and draw whatever you want, we'll dialogue it. And there is, like, not another artist we trust to do that kind of thing. And Amanda's strength is actually, you know, character acting in the characters have great acting in her books. So it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's great that we can. The best thing is if the book does well, we can actually, like, do store signings or, like, go to a con. Like, the three of us can be invited at the same time. So that's, like, really exciting for us because we like to show up at the same place, all of us.
You know, that's one of the things I was going to talk about earlier, is that your name
really always comes in a pair, it seems like. It's like, you know, Quesada Palmiotti, or Palmiotti Gray, or Palmiotti and Connor. But you're always like the center cog on all of these names that, that just kind of seem to come along with you. How cool has it been to have all of these partnerships in comics?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I feel I'm lucky. And if you notice, it's very rare I let my name be put first. I actually fight it off first. Mm-hmm. You'll see Justin's name first before mine, because everyone else gets unfair treatment because I've been around longer, so they tend to throw my name on first. But it's not fair. But it's great. I mean, Joe, you know, I met Joe at a con and we became friends. And you know, Dan DiDio and I, people don't remember this, Dan DiDio and I worked on Superboy together.
Oh wow!
Before he was ever editor in chief. Dan DiDio was my next door neighbor. He was a guy that was not in comics. He worked for, I think it was ABC, and then he worked for Mainframe. He did like Reboot and Beast Wars and stuff like that. Dan was like a left field guy. When he got the call to become editor in chief, he called me up. He's like, dude, do they know I'm the same guy writing Superboy with you? And I'm like, absolutely not.
So did you?
Otherwise, you wouldn't get it, because if one read a Superboy, they would have never hired him. But, you know, it's great. It's nice to see friends of mine doing so well. Again, you know, Dan Buckley is a guy I've been friends with for years and years and years. I met him while we were doing Marvel Knights, and we stayed friends, even though he left the business for like 5-6 years. So it's really wild. It's a lot of fun. And again, you know, you three guys are sitting in the studio and you're friends, right?
Yeah,
you guys are all pretty good friends.
Whenever we're recording. Afterwards, it's cage fight.
You don't hang out afterwards?
No, we do. Chris and I actually work together.
I mean, that's the fun of it is after this, you guys can all grab a drink and hang out and, you know, BS in the bar. And I mean, that's really the special times in life. You know, it's not so much a lot of other things. You know, I'm sure it's great to give birth. I'm sure. But anyway, you know, I just think that, you know, I just think that those are the times that are special. I think people need to appreciate it. And for me, getting to work with my friends is like a great gift. You know, I'm getting to work with people. Comics can be very solitary. You know, you can sit there and draw a book and take 3 weeks and never leave your room, you know. And I don't know how people do it. Guys like John Romita Jr. who do 2 books a month, I don't know how he does it, you know. The guy just amazes me. And
because he's a god.
Yeah, he is a
guy.
I feel like that speech should end, and we should add it in a slow clap at the end. Like a nice, like, and everyone stands.
Well, we do know that John Romita Jr. is a god. I love him so much. He's such a great guy.
We talked to John in Chicago, and he's not a not a more gracious person you could ever meet.
For a guy,
he's like Vinnie Barbarino's brother.
I gotta tell you,
I'll give you the job when my mother dies, right? You know?
I had never actually heard him talk or met him in person before. We met him at Wizard World Chicago, and we were standing waiting for him to finish a signing, and I kept looking at him, and I'd hear him talk to the people coming up getting
Horseshack.
And no, I kept imagining it was oh God, no! I can't.
Tony Danza.
I'm like, God, he just reminds me of Tony
Danza.
Hold on. So I'm thinking that in my head, right? So then we go and do an interview with him, and he was great. He was just amazingly nice and gracious and just fantastic. And at the end of it, we asked if he'd do a bumper, and I kid you not, the bumper is, "Hi, this is Tony Danza, and you're listening to Around Comics." And I started laughing my ass off. I couldn't believe, you know, I was like, "Oh,
hey, that's a good bumper. That's a good bumper. This is Stan Lee. When my hearing's good, I listen to Around Comics. Granted, it's not that often these days, and usually I just go on the internet for that funny stuff."
My girlfriend heard the Tony Danza one, and she was like, "Tony Danza listens to your podcast."
Yeah, I love that. That's so random. It's wonderful.
That's awesome.
You know.
All right. Well, our next forum post is from John Sokol, and he said, "You seem to enjoy pushing boundaries in your stories. Is there anything you got away with that shocked you that editorial let it slide? Do you have any good stories or something you tried to get into a book and editorial really clamped down on you?"
One thing I got away with, and I don't even know. Are you guys familiar with the term Coney Island whitefish?
Sure, I am.
For those listeners out there,
wiki
it. We refer to that as condoms on the beach.
Ah.
Coney Island whitefish. And there's Deadpool issue that I wrote, that it's there as plain as day. And he's just going, he's like, what do you come down here and hang out and fish out, you know, look for Coney Island whitefish? And he goes like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. And I really didn't know what it was, and I was giggling, and, you know. And then there's thing that didn't, some stuff that didn't, like, they, you know, they caught us on. And actually, I credit Justin for this particular line. It was in a DC book. I don't want to say exactly what it is because it's not out yet. I don't want to ruin story. There's a DC book where a girl finds out her father's a robot, and the robot is sarcastic. And now this is a father looking at his daughter, but the father's a robot, right? Mm-hmm. And the robot goes, "Come over here and give daddy a tug." And the daughter goes, "What did you just say?" He said, "Hug. Give your daddy a hug." You know. And we thought that was hysterical. we were laughing like, that's the most wrong thing we ever wrote. And the editor calls up and like, you guys are high if you think that's going to be in the comics. And we're like, oh, okay. I mean, we do put a lot of stuff in there all the time that gets taken out. Because I think sometimes you just have to write. We had stuff in Hex that, you know, too brutal, too crazy.
You're shooting people in the head. In
Hex, but the superhero stuff, we tend to push it a little further, or I like in Daughters of the Dragon, I want to see nipple all the time on those girls. I think it's, I back it up. I say, it's cold, they're in New York, the nipples will be pushing out right now. And,
how realistic,
you know,
do you want
say, you know, you got to cool down with the nipples, and I'm like, look, we're not, you know, we're not Desperate Housewives. We don't have, need to spend money to take them off, and it's a T&A book. Part of the T is the nipple. Okay? And I make no apologies about this. Okay, if it's a rated R movie, I want to see tits and ass and blood and cursing. I don't want to see an R rated movie where none of these exist.
Right, what's the point?
I don't get it. Why bother? Uh-huh. You know. So Daughters of the Dragon. You know, Carrie Evans. We had to kind of like, there was some bare ass shots. You know, some bare boob shots we had to take out. And actually, he's working on Shanna right now, and you know how tempting that is. But I say, you know, we just call the book Camel Toe and get it over with. That's what I say.
Camel Toe, the series. Civil War crossover.
Yeah.
I think Camel Toe would be the coolest female villain ever.
Oh, geez. No.
If we can get away with it.
But and her partner, Moose Knuckle.
It would probably work at Wildstorm, a book called Camel Toe. By the way, we, you know, listeners of Around Comics, you've heard it here first, the creation of Camel Toe coming from Wildstorm.
Well, we are a news and information site.
Hey, Jimmy, you can put your name first on that one, okay?
All right, well, I have people passing me notes here in the shop. That's we have.
Your zip is open?
Yeah. We've opened the floor to questions here. Had Mike Cusco here in Chicago wants to know how you guys came up with the idea to tell the story never told in the Hex origin, which is coming up.
In the what? The
Jonah Hex origin that you guys are doing.
Oh, the Jonah Hex, how we came up with. You know what? It's actually been told in a lot of little bits and pieces over the 90-plus issues of the book original run. And what we did is we kind of pieced them all together and put them and bookended them with a bigger story. So we kind of took what was some of the things that existed. Like I said, we just gave you a bigger, a more of a story to it rather than little snippets of his life here and there. We really didn't, there's not much in there that's like really, really original because we wanted to respect what came before. But we definitely did our own thing with it.
Do we find out how he is an ancestor of Clint Eastwood?
You know,
go F yourself, Chris.
I would love the fact that, you know, we let the artists do what they want. Mm-hmm. If they want to make them look like Clint, we don't argue.
It's cool. You know? I dig
personally,
it.
Personally, I don't mind it. Like, Lacey really nailed it pretty well, I thought, in the new issue. Well, he did his own Clint, but he did his own dirty thing. Luke Russ, you know, he's a photo ref guy. I can understand why Luke went right for Clint. And realistically, I think the Outlaw Josie Wales was, in a way, my Jonah Hex type movie when I was a kid.
You know, I'll tell you what, the one piece of art in that book that I was just blown away with was the Frank Quitely cover.
Oh, yeah, the first cover.
Man, that was just unreal. I don't think I've ever looked at a Jonah Hex drawing where it looked so real that it was a guy that, you know, half his face was torn off, but it was the same guy. You know, most of the time when someone draws something like that, it's like Two-Face. Two-Face never looks like it's the same guy. It's a monster on one side, but this looked like the same guy.
Boy, I would love to get like 10 copies from him, boy. Let me tell you.
Well, I tell you what, this last issue, Paul Gulacy is a stud. What a gorgeous book.
Isn't it? And you know what's funny? It's like, because they asked me, do you want to ink it? Because I usually ink Paul, and I said, no. No, I'm writing the book. Let Paul ink it. The last, he's so good inking himself, you know, I hate to take that away from him. Usually when I ink him, it's because, you know, he's got to hit a deadline. But this book, he had a break. And I said, Paul, just show off. I said, go in there and show me you still got it, you know?
Sure.
He's like, okay, baby, I got it, you know. And he's a guy, remember, his first master kung fu he drew, he was 16.
Wow.
So that's kind of freaky if you think about it.
Now, are you all done inking Manhunter?
Yeah, I stopped that. I think I only did, I want to say, like 8 or 9 issues of that.
Okay, are you?
I haven't been on it in a while.
Okay, have you put the inking tools down for a while with everything that
you're
writing?
No, I just finished, Secret Six, number 5. I just finished the Gail Simone series.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I think number 6 comes in next week, and I'm inking Terra over Amanda, and I'm inking Shanna.
Now, if you screw up those inks, you've got hell to pay, right?
With Amanda?
Yeah.
You know what? The great thing is, after I'm done, Amanda takes the page and messes with it. and I love it, because you, as an inker, you should have no ego. Whatever makes her happy, she should do to it. I don't care. I wish I had Paul Gulacy in my neighborhood when I worked on Catwoman with him, because nothing would make me happy if he went, you should do this, you should do it this way, you know? Because the artists, they know what they want, but they can't always get it down in pencil form. And inking is hard for them sometimes because the tools, it's just a different kind of tool, you know? But I got those things. And Carrie Evans, I mean, you got to remember, Daughters of the Dragon was the first comic he ever drew. Okay?
What? Really?
Yeah, that was the first comic he ever, he never drew a comic book before.
Jeez.
I found him in Los Angeles. He's showing me his stuff. He was showing me his work. And I'm like, dude, you're good. I can get you work. And he goes, really? He was designing video games.
Well, that's funny. We actually have a forum post that's kind of about that. Go ahead,
about sort of the pencilers artists. Yeah. Do you guys often get to bring pencilers artists into projects with you, or does editorial handle most of that? And that's from Matthew Guy.
No, that's from Steve Bryant.
Oh, well, okay. His name is...
Well, I prefer to bring the artist to the project, because then we know what we're going to get. And we also pitch with the artist attached. So Shanna was because of Carrie. Actually, Daughters of the Dragon, we just had Carrie do a couple of drawings of Misty and Colleen, and I gave it to Joe, to Saturn, and Joe was like, oh, my God. And I'm like, yeah, we could do this to 6 issues. We got an idea. And he's like, done. Get this guy going. Get him working. So, you know, it's easy to bring in. Terra is an easy sell when we have Amanda attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so on and so forth. Freedom Fighters, having Daniel Acuna do sketches of the characters, you know, all of a sudden the book is got a green light. So, and I do like to look at, I do like to bring in new guys. I mean, we have a site called Paper Films. It's paperfilms.com. And, anybody wants to post some new stuff they got, or at least hit me up, show me their stuff. If you think it's professional level, I am all for bringing in new guys. I am not, like 3 out of the 4 projects I'm doing are done by guys who haven't really done books.
We know quite a few artists.
Dave Wachter is coming
I know a guy named Dave Wachter that you need to take a look.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hit me up, man. If it's good, I'll give you work. I'll get you work somehow. I'll get you work. Artists that blow me away, I will spend day and night finding something for them.
Well, that's great.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's very
cool. Remember, not everybody's a good salesman, even for their own work. Sometimes you need somebody to go in there and make a little noise for you.
I found that with most artists, because most artists have a tendency of being self-deprecating. They don't like what they do, and so they're the worst salesman for their own stuff.
Yeah, it's okay. You can be that way with other artists. But if you're with an editor or a company, you gotta make a little noise. You gotta say, hey, look, I can do that.
Hey, are we ever?
You know, I could do that better than anybody. Okay, even if you suck, I think you still need to kind of go out there and push your work. That's the only way. You know, you gotta be open to learning. And I will at any con, anybody show me their work, I will sit down with them at least for a couple of minutes and go over what they should be doing. So there's always like there's like three or four pieces of advice I give everybody that draws, and you know it usually winds up being the same three or four things that every person I meet. You know, it's just a lot. Sometimes a lot of people just need a little helping along, and they don't need a ton of work. They just need a little bit.
Hi, I'm Simon Oliver, the writer of The Exterminators, and you're listening to Around Comics.
Are we ever going to see, and forgive me if this has already happened because I'm not caught up, but Quentin Turnbull in the current Jonah Hex series?
We have plans, you know, everybody asked for Mei Ling and, like, all these other characters. Eventually, everything will happen. Let's just put it this way. We have a hit list of things we want to bring into the series and characters we want to bring in. And Batlash and El Diablo were our first two. And it goes on from there. So, you know, eventually everything that you're looking for will be in that book.
Cool.
Plus some new characters. We have a Tallulah Black character that's coming in that Phil Noto's drawing now that it's not only a beautiful issue, but she's just as twisted as Jonah. It's kind of a fun character.
Well, you guys got me hooked on that series, definitely. I'm absolutely enjoying the hell out of it, and we'll continue to be buying that. And hopefully other people will, too.
And it's the easiest book out there to just tell someone, you know what, go buy one issue and try it out, because that's all they have to do.
Yeah, I mean, at one point I wanted to offer, like, I'll pay if you don't like it. And then I realized that, what am I, stupid? I don't have any money, you know? I hustle, you know? I did do a thing with retailers on the retailer boards that if they wanted some signed books for their stores, you know, I'd more than willing to get all my comps and send them out. And I did. I sent like 37 envelopes full of signed Jonah Hexes. But I ran out of everything. I'm all out of the books now. But, you know, you try to do grassroots stuff. I still have my you know, my origins are like, especially event comics, it's all grassroots. So you need to make connections with people and retailers and support them and, you know, go out and shake hands with the fans and sign their books. It's, you know, the thing I do is at a con, if you bring me 300 books that I did, I will sign all 300. If you're crazy enough to carry all these damn things and buy them, I'll sign them. You know, there's certain things, you know, I still remember getting online for George Perez to get a sketch. I still remember waiting online for an hour for Jim Stranko just to show him some artwork I did and, you know, and then him sitting with me. You know, you remember that stuff. You never lose that, and you try to bring that into everything you do. You try to bring that humility, and for me, when I go to the cons, I try to be on my best behavior. Even if I'm hungover and bleeding from some hole somewhere, and, you know, I try to just put the best face forward and try to meet everybody, thinking that this will be the only minute they ever meet me in their life. So I'm not going to be a dick.
It's the Joe DiMaggio. Why do you play so hard, kid? Because there may be someone out there that's never seen me play before.
Well, like, people are so, you know, people who'd be like, oh, I don't know if I'd read Jonah Hex. But from my own experience of, like, talking to creators and stuff, you can get past all that just by meeting someone and talking to them and being like,
absolutely.
Oh, they're really cool.
Oh, my God,
I'll pick it up.
About actors. Like, if you meet an actor and they're friendly to you, all of a sudden everything they do, you're like, hey, you know, that guy's pretty cool.
Right.
It definitely has a lot to do. It also has the other thing, like, you know, when they're, well, you know, like, I like Mel Gibson, but that shit he did, you know, the sugar tits line had me laughing. I have to admit, I've kind of used that a couple of times. But, you know, the other stupid stuff he did, and look, he was drunk, whatever, I'm not making excuses for him, but it's hard because I love that guy. You know, like, I love those Lethal Weapon movies.
It was Mad Max.
Oh, my God, Mad Max and Road Warrior. You know, but it's hard, like, when it gets tainted like that, you know, to kind of wash that away or forget about that. And it taints it. It does in some way, you know, it definitely does. And there's one or two creators that I've met that have been total a-holes.
Joe Quesada.
Okay. And and they
Stop
are.
It.
No, I'm kidding.
Well, I'll tell you.
On Around Comics next week. No,
I'll tell you what.
No, I never forget that. When I was a kid, they were really just nasty to me, you know? And I'll never forget that. And I don't even buy their books. I don't even look at their stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what. We had a few weeks back, we had John Byrne on the show. And my biggest...
Who?
John Byrne.
I'm kidding.
And my biggest fear going into it for, like, you know, 3 weeks was he was going to be a dick. because he was, as a kid, I mean, he was my hero. I wanted to draw like John Byrne. I, you know, and obviously as I grew up, you know, things changed, but still, that part, there was some part of me that was still 12 years old.
No, I don't want that to be idolized, by this guy.
And
yeah.
I didn't, and he turned out to be just a great guy, but you know.
Yeah, you know, I've never had a bad experience with John. I mean, he bailed on the Superman book we wrote, one of the movie kind of one of the sideways movie books that we did. John bailed on it, but I never had a really bad experience with him. Every time I see him, he's friendly. I say hello. I just think John maybe should turn off his computer.
Yeah.
I think that maybe. It's not good to kind of just vent and then say send. You know, I think it's good to vent and then say send later and then read it the next day maybe.
And that's what it was when we talked to him, is because for us, we know two things about John Byrne. We know about all the art that he did and the stories that he wrote whenever we were growing up and now, and then we know his persona online. And so we are scared as hell.
Yeah, and it stinks. And you know what? This is before you, all of us were born. But there was a time when, like, celebrities and famous people weren't accessible. They weren't accessible. And the studios controlled the image.
Rock Hudson was
and,
gay.
And, you know, I think in a way that's okay, but I also kind of really enjoy the fact that a lot of the creators, they're just regular guys. I found it when I was younger very encouraging that a guy like George Perez or Strenko or these guys would sit with you and just BS. And talk to you like they knew you for years. And, you know, because it made it, I think, in my head that I can do this job. Like, I can be like these guys. It's not so beyond me that I can't try. Like, these guys are doing it, and they're still saying that they're trying their hardest and stuff like that. And it inspires you in a way. I know, like, when we were dealing, Joe and I were dealing with Kevin Smith for a couple of years. You know, when we did Daredevil, we were on his movie sets, like two or three of his movies. You know, and he would ask, you know, do you want to be in this, or do you want to be this and that? And I only did it once with Joe. Like, Joe and I did the opening of Chasing Amy, which they cut out. And after that, I was like, you know, I never want to act again. I don't have it in me. You know, and but you know, to get the balls to even sit there and do it, like, you know, it was crazy.
Oh,
and,
what a great experience.
You know, and I think in a way, you know, making these guys, they're just regular guys. You meet Kevin Smith, he's a regular guy. You know, and there's no really real Superman except for, it kind of reduces everything. The only thing, there's a downside of that, which is there's no more adults in the world. I don't know if you guys have gotten to that stage yet, where no matter what went wrong, there was always an adult you can run to. Like,
well, I got two kids, so yeah, there's no adults left for me to run to. It's the other way
right.
around.
Right, and, you know, now that we're that guys in a way, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, my God, they didn't know what they were doing either.
They all had a goddamn clue what they were doing.
Right, well, yeah. But I think comic books are the cool thing. See, comics are cool because people can put out their own books. They can go, there's a company I use called Kablam online, Kablam.com. Like, they'll print, like, 200 of whatever I want. And with money I can make working in Burger King for 2 weeks, you know? I think it's really accessible, and I think it's one of those fields where we really don't have any superstars, I think, besides, I think there's Jim Lee, Frank Miller, Stan Lee. I think that's it.
I don't even, right?
Who's the other big superstar?
Joss Whedon, I would say.
Alan Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Joss Whedon, like, right, he's a TV guy.
Right, Alan Moore. Yeah.
Alan Moore, but nobody sees him.
Right, he's the recluse.
I think the interesting thing about it is, like, to put out a 200-issue run of your comic book, I think sometimes we lose track of, in sort of creative endeavors, that it can be as worthwhile to the person that puts it out as the audience. Because everyone seems so obsessed with, you know, you've sold 20,000. The cutoff point's 10,000. If you sell below 10,000, your book will get canceled. Instead of thinking about it as sort of a purely creative endeavor. Because I think sometimes we get really caught up in sort of commercial because we have to. But there's a certain avenue in comics that needs to be appreciated, where people put out, you can put out a really small book.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, I you know, put it this way, if I was putting out my own Image book and I did 10,000, that's a party, dude.
Sure.
You know, that's a party, but with Marvel and DC, they'd be like, oh, that's it, you know. You know, but the thing is, when I was a kid, I still have this stupid comics I made when I was a kid. I went to, like, one of my friend's father's office and Xeroxed them and stapled them. And I thought it was so cool. Like, here's my comic, and it's, you know, it's about a guy that lives in this town, and it just keeps rambling. You know, it's horrible.
Who well, just stapled his own comics.
Yeah, well, those are mini comics. You're very hip to do that.
But, I mean, you know, where else do you have that? You know, that's the cool thing. And I can't tell you how many times it shows guys give me their mini comics, and I'm, like, on the plane back, I got a pile of them, and I'm just looking through them and laughing at some of them.
Sure.
And then some of them are brilliant ideas I want to steal so bad, so I must forget about them the minute I read it. You know, because it's like, you know, one guy had this great idea. He's like, what if you, I want to, like, offer this company that will, if you bring in a hair sample or any kind of sample of somebody you hate, we'll clone him to the age he is, and you can kick the shit out of him. And I'm like, awesome. Oh, my God. Like, so I bring you one of my boss's hairs. My wife's hair, and you create a second one that I can shoot.
That's a great idea. Talk about
right, simple, great. There's some kid on the street handed it to me, you know. And I was like, oh, I can never do that.
Another idea,
you know. But and he'll never do it either, mind you. but you know, it's that kind of thing. And like I said, comics. I think thank God we're in comics now, because you guys got to notice this too. There's a lot more respect being thrown around.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, you guys might even go out and get laid, like, you know. Because
you know, oddly enough, all three of the guys on this panel will go home to women tonight.
Right. Okay, oh, none of you get laid. Okay, I got it.
It's always a day-by-day lease with me.
This isn't...
when you first met your women, they were like, comics? What?
No. Now, my wife hates comics, doesn't want anything to do with them, and thinks I'm a dork for reading them.
I hid the fact that I read comics from my girlfriend until pretty much I lived with her.
My girlfriend thinks I'm bowling.
we're pretty
authentic bowling smell can in your car. Yeah. I remember I used to, you know, be out and I'd say, oh yeah, well, I work on comics, and that was usually like the same thing as saying, I'm a puppeteer. You know?
I'm a mime.
I'm a priest.
I take care of my mom. You know, yeah, I mean, and now it's a little different. I mean, and again, I guess because we're all over the media doing wonderful movies like X-Men 3 and Elektra, and we're getting all the respect in the world.
Oh, sure.
I'm kidding there. They're not wonderful movies, by the way. But, you know, I think it's a good time to be in comics. I think we might have some credibility somewhere these days. Right. But we always have it with our peers. We always have it with the people that buy the books. We love them.
I'll tell you what. I just hope, you know, you and Justin don't ever get discouraged, because I think you guys are putting out some really good books. And I know they may not be, you know, huge, gigantic runaway successes for you yet. But I just, I think you're putting out really good work and stuff that's on the fringe of you know, all the superhero stuff that's out there and being done, and it's the kind of books that I want to read.
Well, I think the big thing is that they're good.
Yeah, and they're good
Hex.
Books. Yeah, go
I
go buy Jonah.
I wouldn't have picked
Hex.
It up, and I read the trade and I loved it. Yeah. So I mean,
well, thanks. I mean, hey, look, all we can do is try to do the best we can at all times. You know, I always say I might die tomorrow, so I really got to do some good work tonight.
All right. Well, Jimmy, we're going to let you go here in just a minute, but want to thank you. So that was the longest, like, half-hour interview we've had.
I know. Amanda's making the feed me face towards me. Well, like, I'm hungry. Right, Amanda? Are you hungry?
I'm hungry.
Okay.
Hey, can you do us a favor and pass an invitation along to Amanda, because we'd like to have her back
Amanda,
on the show.
Amanda, you guys
point.
For a second? You guys oh, rest.
That
you
doesn't
have
to be right
Amanda
now.
For a minute. You want it?
Sure. Sure.
Okay, here you go.
Go cook.
What? Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Amanda.
How are you?
Fantastic. This is Chris and Tom and Sal at Around Comics.
Hi, Chris and Sal and Tom. How are you?
Fantastic.
We're Chris, doing... Sal, and Tom are good.
thank
what's
you.
What's wrong with you, Chris?
Oh, I'm good too. I'm just sitting back and watching the circus.
Thank you for allowing us to steal Jimmy from you for a couple hours here tonight.
That's okay, no problem.
It's been a peaceful Friday night for you, probably.
It's a what?
It's probably been a peaceful Friday night for you since he's been tied up on the phone.
Yeah, it has been pretty peaceful. The only person that's been, like, harassing me is my cat. She's hungry. I guess I'm pretty hungry, too.
Well, we'll let you guys go. We just wanted to say hi and offer an invitation out to you if you ever want to spend, you know, 30, 40 minutes or an hour and a half with us to talk okay. about what you're working on. We'd love to have you on the show, too.
I will. I'll take you up on that.
All right.
Excellent.
Here's Jimmy. Hold on.
Right. Goodbye.
See, I know a girl.
How did you get so lucky?
I don't know. I she attacked me anyway. Let's be honest. I she came after me.
Are you one of the guys that just Forrest Gumps through life? Where like
Forrest Gump. How nice.
Where everything no matter okay. how bad it could be just ends up working out, you know, perfectly for you.
You know, I tell you,
Jonah had to sell 100,000
covers before I ever met her, and when I met her, I was like, "Hey, this is a cool girl." You know, like what's she doing in comics? And I think it was four of them at the time, like four women in comics. I think it was Colleen Duran and the Chicago native Jill Thompson.
Sure, absolutely.
You guys ever interview her?
We have not talked to Jill. We gotta hunt her down and get her into the shop one Friday.
Jill is so awesome. Let me tell you, she's awesome. But there was like only three or four girls in comics. Now there's a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But Amanda's a special case. I mean, you guys should definitely talk to her one day because she's hysterical.
Well, when does Tara come out?
Tara comes out in January.
Well, I tell you what, let's talk to her in January.
Okay, cool.
That sounds great. Jimmy.
Guys, thank you so much. We'll and the Wizard guys, you know, I always pick on them because they really need to feature me more. That's what I'm saying.
We agree.
They've never done a story where, like, about me or Justin. Last story I had was in 1996 with Event Comics. You
wow.
believe that?
10 years.
Man. You're too well known to be that unknown.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what? Who cares, right?
Hey, you're having fun. You're writing comics.
As long as I'm in CBG. Do you guys still read CBG?
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of like it. It has the most bizarro articles, like, you know, the 18 bizarro, most bizarro moments of the bizarros. And where else are you going to find that?
No, it's good because it's... They talk about stuff that you're not going to read. Like, Wizard never talks about anything that I don't already...
No.
Like 3 months ahead.
Yeah.
Time. You know, like, that's...
It's you have to worry whenever you start ending up in back issue that you've been around for a while.
Yeah, and you know what? I do like the fact that I don't feel guilty throwing it out when I'm done because it's on newsprint.
Sure.
You know, we still have this thing, I guess, in comics that we hate to throw out anything on slick paper. I don't know if you guys have that. I'm getting over it slowly. But you become a pack rat. When you collect comics, it's a very pack rat mentality.
You mean like a collector mentality? That would never exist.
Yeah. I want less comics. I just want more trade books. Hey. I wish every comic was 98 pages.
Oh.
I agree.
And $2.
$1.
Yeah, I was
like,
talking
for $5 and walk out with 5 books.
Ah, there you go.
You know, I pitched when we were in Marvel Knights. I know I'm running too long. When I was in Marvel Knights, I pitched that we, instead of doing X-Men... five different X-Men. What we do is we put all five into one book called X-Men January, X-Men February, and it would just be like one price, like $5 for everything, you know?
X-Men, you're going to buy it anyway.
That way we can keep it on bookshelves all year round.
That's such a bad idea.
Everyone thought I was nuts, and that's why I no longer work there.
Then you wouldn't be able to live that crazy jet-set lifestyle that, you know, from all those big dollars you're getting in, raking
in.
Yes,
fewer trips to Florida.
You know, we have a house down there. That's why we go down there.
Because
we live in an apartment in Brooklyn that literally, if I ran from one side of it to the other, I couldn't actually run because you need to get up speed.
Where do you live in Brooklyn?
In Sheepshead Bay.
Oh, okay.
Look, there's three people outside now giving me the finger. Great.
I know a couple people that live in Carroll Gardens in Brooklyn.
You see, Carroll Gardens is nice. Yeah. Well, I'm really like down the block from the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh,
if that large landmass in Africa falls, I'm the first guy to get wiped out. So, you know, eBay those books.
Nice. Well, Jimmy, thank you so much, and we would love to have you on any time that you have an upcoming project.
All right, thanks, guys.
Listen to Around Comics, new every Monday, and now with all new and improved bumpers between segments. The anticipation is killing you, isn't it?
All right, folks, that was our chat with Jimmy Palmiotti.
He's quite the regular kind of guy, you know? He's one of them New Yorkers guys, you know? He's in New York.
That was a lot of fun.
I enjoyed talking to him.
I did. What is that?
So what's wrong with your voice?
Is that the Vegas voice?
You got the Vegas. Vegas. When we have a guest on, I try and talk. Try and talk normal.
He was
I'm like Elvis.
You know, we've talked about movies. We talked about TV, and we talked to Amanda. We even got to talk to Amanda for a little while.
We had a good time.
We didn't get to talk to Justin, but. You know, what are you going to do?
Maybe we'll have...
It was a great first date.
That'll be Amanda and Justin on next time.
Talking all the dirt about Jimmy.
It was a really good first date.
First date. You feel satisfied? Did you get the first base or second?
Do
you think we got?
It was a really good conversation, which is all you can hope for, really. These days, with friends in MySpace, you can't even meet these people.
Yeah, you know, it's like serial killers. Yeah. You don't know what the fuck you're going to run into out there.
So cheers, Jimmy. Good times.
What the hell are you doing?
I don't know.
This little bat's blue really good to your, you know.
It's Canadian.
It's Canadian. It's
drinking the Canadian.
It's only 11.5 ounces a bottle, though, so I feel cheated slightly. Anywho.
You know that Canadian beer. It's like moonshine.
Anywho.
All right. All right, guys. Well, once again, thank you.
Do we have any announcements?
We do not have any more announcements, but we have more voicemails.
Oh, right.
You want to play voicemail?
Can you turn that up a little, the voicemail? A little? Sure. Turn it up?
Sure, absolutely.
Hot mic.
Do we want to listen to a voicemail?
Sure, absolutely.
Yes,
as long as it's not another listener bitching because I haven't sent him a sketch.
Oh, no, but there is more bitching in
this. Great.
Is there? I love it.
There's our buddy in another New Yorker, David D.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Around Comics guys. It is David D. calling again from New York City. I was just listening to the latest episode, which is great. Really enjoyed the Greg Rucka interviews. But I have an idea for a new show feature. Or gag.
Oh, we can't take
or maybe you
unsolicited.
Could even think of it as a game. But I was thinking that maybe as a running thing, each time that Brian mispronounces Garth Ennis's name as if he is a deputy on the Dukes of Hazzard, I think he should have to buy Tom
shit on me,
a quarter book.
Yes, I love it.
And maybe, Tom has until the end of the episode to go and find the quarter book. So if Tom gets bored, it's an excuse for him to get up and walk around, and at the end of the episode, he can let us all know what quarter book Brian is going to have to buy him. And this way, there's a sense of,
this is quarter books.
And eventually, Brian will get Mr. Ennis' name right. So that's my idea. Just giving you crap, of course. Great show. Always getting better. Website's always getting better. Enjoy it very much. And I look forward to the next one.
And then he called back and left this.
Oh, and if he tries to do, the fake British accent again, then it's two quarter books for Tom, I think. That just is a little add-on. If you like the Garth Ennis one, just another little one that, anytime there's a fake British accent. And it doesn't just have to be Brian. Anybody tries to fake... other than Tom. If anybody other than Tom tries to
say... Can you call me Sal? I don't know you well enough for you to call me Brian.
You
gotta
buy two quarter books. All right, that's it.
You know what's funny? Is he mispronounced Garth. It's actually Gareth.
Gareth.
Everyone always focuses on the last name.
So what is this? It's I say
Ennis. Ennis.
Do I say Ennis all the time?
You do.
Well, it's because it's spelled just like penis.
No, it's not.
Oh, there's two N's. Yeah, penis.
It has...
Tennis? Yeah, I guess it is Ennis.
Yeah, it's Ennis.
Ah, fuck him, he's Scottish. What do I
say? I was going to correct you, but I figure I'd just keep, letting you make the mistake.
Ennis, I was hoping for an underground drinking game.
Yep. Every
time you mispronounce
the
name.
I still do it. I just have that in my head. I don't know.
Gentlemen, Ennis, can we agree to continue to mispronounce his name? It's been put to a vote.
But, if you're going to leave a voicemail, I'd prefer you people call me Sal. I don't know you people well enough.
You people.
For my Christian name.
Right.
Although I'm not Christian.
Thanks, David D. We're just kidding.
Thank you
for calling.
Thanks, David. And actually, David had another great voicemail, but, we're only going to play one of his voicemails an episode.
Yes.
So
bitching about me in any way?
Maybe. I've got it.
I see where I stand on this fucking show.
All right, guys. Well, that will take care of the first half of Around Comics. That means it's time to move over to the news desk and let everybody know what's been going on in the world of comics for the last week. It's time for Wire to Wire Comic News.
These are your top headlines for the week of October 2nd, 2006. Dark Horse plans to launch one new licensed manga title, a new original English language manga title, a great background book, and several manga repackages for early 2007. The new manga title is Tenpenchu, a two-volume series collecting shorter works by Eden creator Hiroki Endo. The first Tenpenchu volume, which will street in January, will collect three short stories with mature themes. The three storylines concern a doomed Yakuza outcast, a group of school kids with one about to boil over, and the members of an experimental theater troupe. The 232-page manga-sized trade paperback will be shrink-wrapped and carry an 18 and over content advisory and retail for $12.95. Writer Warren Ellis to attend the San Diego Comic-Con. The following is as read from the writer's website and email newsletter, Bad Signal. It appears that I'm going to be attending the San Diego Comics Convention in 2007. I was talking to William at Avatar last month, and he was saying that I should do San Diego again one day. So I said, sure, get me a business class flight, a decent hotel room, and security, because Nikki's convinced that one of us is going to get shot at a big convention one day, and you're on. Knowing full well that all that would not happen, which is my usual mistake. He came back a week later and said, I sorted all that out, and you are now a guest of Avatar Press at the 2007 San Diego Comics Convention. Best-selling author Greg Hurwitz, the writer behind Kill Claws and A Last Shot, will be revamping Fool Killer for the Marvel Max line. Hurwitz is bringing his gritty street crime writing sensibilities to the hard-edged anti-hero Fool Killer for a 5-issue miniseries this winter. A sneak preview of the series can be seen in the Wednesday, October 4th released Max Sampler. Loving Capes, Tom Zeller's acclaimed heroically super situation comedy comic book, is coming back just in time for the holidays. Loving Capes number 2 will be available for advance order through Diamond Comics Previews catalog in October to be in stores just before Christmas. Loving Capes number 2 is 24 full-color pages of holiday fun that combines the witty dialogue and unique art style that made Loving Capes number 1 such a hit with critics and fans alike. Prior to the release of the second issue, Tom Zeller is giving fans a chance to become better acquainted with his characters by making Loving Capes number 1 available in its entirety at www.loveandcapes.com for a limited time. Watch out as Mike Mignola, Kevin Nolan, Humberto Ramos, Chris Pacciolo, John Cassaday, Terry Dodson, Glenn Fabry, and Sam Keith join the usual gang of idiots next month in the pages of Mad Magazine number 472. The artist will illustrate lesser-known supervillains, which profiles evildoers including the Yakmaster, Dr. Umbridge, the Clarinetist, and Professor Generico. We wanted this comic book villains article to be as authentic as possible, said Mad editor John Ficarra, so we went out and found the most sinister and evil comic book artist working today. Mad number 472 is solicited in the September previews and is scheduled to arrive in stores on November 1st. Entertainment Weekly is featuring a special 7-page preview of Action Comics number 844 on their website EW.com. This is the first issue by the new creative team of writers Jeff Johns and Richard Donner and artist Adam Kubert. Action Comics' Last Son, in which Supes goes all mother hen after the feds discover a new Kryptonian boy on Earth. The folks at DC Comics have recruited Richard Donner, director of 1978 Superman, to join forces with writer, one-time Donner assistant, Jeff Johns, and artist Adam Kubert. Action Comics number 844 is solicited in the August previews and is scheduled to arrive in stores on October 25th. Dark Horse Comics will release The Art of Making 300 in January, before the Warner Brothers feature film release based on Frank Miller's graphic novel in March. The Art of Making 300 will include behind-the-scenes full-color images with 200 pages of production photos and concept art. It comes as a 9x12 trade paperback and will retail for $24.95. Dark Horse has also issued an updated hardcover version of the 300 graphic novel, which uses the logo from the movie on its cover. That title is currently available and retails for $30. The 300 series, featuring the collaboration of Frank Miller with artist Lynn Varley, won 5 Eisners, including a Best Limited Series, a Best Writer/Artist, and Best Colorist. Alias Comics has announced that they will be changing their publishing plan, this time to focus their efforts in and around the Christian market. The company underwent a full restructuring in November of 2005, with founder Brett Berner purchasing a majority of the company's shares in order to take control of the company's financial records. The move allowed Alias to reportedly be financially independent, operating solely off the income generated by its comics and properties. "We're going all Christian," says Mike Miller. "It's just obvious that Alias needs to do this, and all the time and effort that goes into publishing other people's work for the secular market is taking time and effort away from the work where Alias is finding the most success financially as well as spiritually." The list of soon-to-be homeless secular titles also includes some of Miller's own work, including Lullaby, The Imaginaries, and Six Gun Samurai. The long-running case of the state of Georgia versus Gordon Lee has gone back to court for hearings on motions. This is the second such hearing in a case that has run for nearly 2 years, seen 3 arraignments and at least 2 sets of facts, all arising from the same 2004 incident. To date, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund has spent roughly $70,000 defending Gordon Lee's case. Louise Mills of Marshall, Missouri, has requested that 2 graphic novels, Fun Home by Allison Bechtel and Blankets by Craig Thompson, be removed from the Marshall Public Library because she feels that those books are inappropriate. Mills has filed forms with the library to request the removal of the books. In response, the Marshall Public Library Board of Trustees held a public hearing at 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 4th, to hear a request to remove material from the library. Marshall Public Library Director Amy Crump said that almost any book in the library can be seen as offensive to someone. "Anytime a person or one group of people are allowed to mandate what information is available to an entire community, you find yourself on a slippery slope of censorship," Crump said. The hearing lasted the full 2 hours allotted, and over 20 Marshall and Saline County citizens were able to make their voices heard. Less than 1/4 were in support of the library's decision to put the 2 books on the shelves. Wright wrapped up the hearing by letting those assembled know that the library board welcomes the opinions of the public. "We listen to every word, we are open-minded, and we do care and want the library to be the best it can be," Wright said. "A decision on what actions to take on the issue will be made during the next library board meeting on Wednesday, October 11th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be open to the public." Ellison Diodato on Thunderbolts. At the end of Civil War No. 4, the comics world saw the shocking formation of a brand new team of Thunderbolts, comprised of some of the most evil supervillains in the Marvel Universe. But these aren't the only new members of the team. Starting with Thunderbolts No. 110, Warren Ellis and Mike Diodato will be coming on board to tell the story of this all-new, all-deadly squad. They're the all-new, all-deadly Thunderbolts, making the world safer for ordinary people and one would-be costumed hero at a time. In the wake of Civil War, Warren Ellis and Mike Diodato present a dark and disturbing take on Marvel's Most Wanted, where the line between hero and villain is difficult to find, if it even exists at all. These have been your top headlines. For the full version of these and other stories, go to www.aroundcomics.com, your source for the best in comics news, reviews, and opinions.
Those are your top headlines for the week. Coming from the top, looks like Dark Horse is going to release a line of and some collections of some manga. So
manga fans rejoice.
More graphic material is better. Graphic new, novel material.
They're doing OEL stuff too, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Huh, interesting. I'm just not a manga fan, but I'm gonna try. You know,
the challenge.
Yeah, I got the Stephanie Mangle challenge coming.
So,
she's sending me 5 manga books that mm-hmm. she guarantees I'll like at least one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
so. And I sent her 5 books.
The way you have to think about it is, you sent her 5 things that you think, obviously, one of them she'll like. One of them she'll like. So I think you will end up liking one of them. Because,
I probably will. Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest about it. I the biggest thing with manga with me, and I think I put this on the forum today, was it's not that it's bad in any way. It's just the way that it's, because mostly it's translated from Japanese,
you
it
can't
loses,
get past the trans. You can't
I can't get past
the
it because it loses so much subtlety. And I'm a big fan of, like,
well, we'll see. Someday. I bet you will like one of them.
I'm sure I will. Yeah. I'm sure I will. But I sent her 5 books that if she doesn't like, she's, you know, a dummy.
I think it's good. I think it's really cool that you guys have done that, because I think people get so up on, like, I don't like this or I don't like that, and they've never read whatever they're talking about, you know.
She wrote a really, she kind of put it in her article this month for Ed Silver
Bullet. Hey, Supergirl at Silver Bullet College.
And she put it in a great context of, you know, that's what comics should be about, expanding, you know, what you're used to and what, you know,
challenging
yourself. You can
just like it once you read it and don't like it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't have to like it just because everybody else does, but that doesn't mean you don't have to hate it just because...
There's no harm in trying something.
Sure.
Especially which I wish more people would do. If you listen to Jimmy Palmiotti, try Jonah Hex.
There you go.
You know?
Way to bring it back home, Tom.
It's got
way
a DC it thing. Home. Sorry. It's not even that big of a stretch.
All right, guys. You know? Warren Ellis is going to come to San Diego in 2007. Not just San Diego, but to the Comic-Con.
Oh, he's going to a restaurant.
First time in 10 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
He was at Heroes Con this past year. Well, everyone went bonkers because he was there.
He's awesome.
Great writer.
Yeah, so good for him.
Cool.
He stays away because he's become one of those figures that is, he has a big cult following, you know. People are obsessive about Warren Ellis, and I think it scares him a little bit when he's faced with it publicly.
I totally understand.
Yeah.
He can't come to a con and you know, walk around.
And the big news story today that came out is that he's doing Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
Way to jump ahead there, Tom.
Sorry.
So, let's go ahead and talk about it. I was going to say, Bastards at Marvel, I've never bought Thunderbolts except for Civil War, and now they put Ellis on it, and now I got to buy it.
It's actually a pretty good book.
I know, but there are 1,000 really good books out there, and I only have so much money. I have
room for 1,000. Well, you know...
Well, if you'd stop buying Witchblade...
I stopped buying Witchblade.
Well, there you go. Then you can buy...
And it actually wasn't that bad at the end.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing is... Wouldn't you... I would so much rather complain about that. There's so many books I'd rather read right now than and complain about the fact that I have nothing to read.
Oh, sure.
So it's just one more complaint.
The thing you have to understand, too, is just because Warren Ellis is writing it doesn't mean it's going to be good.
Yeah.
I mean, not everything he writes is great. I mean, there's stuff
you can
Most everything he writes is good, but you know,
it might not be good.
But I'll give it. But they've put a writer on a book that I really didn't care about the book, and I'm like, now I gotta buy it.
Yeah, that's what they do.
That's what they do.
Ah, bastards.
All right. How about this writer, Greg Hurwitz, writing Fool Killer for Marvel, the author, award-winning novelist.
Did you guys pick up the Max?
Yeah, wasn't it Meltzer that got him into doing comics?
That's in the story. They were at a signing
and then he stabbed Meltzer in the back and ran over to the Marvel booth?
Something
like that. Well, if he's anything like Meltzer, I'll definitely check out. And it's going to be in the Max line, which will be interesting. Fool Killer. In a Max title, that should be
Max. The whole Max line at Marvel is changing. That's why they put out that preview. Yeah. Is that they're really I don't want to say rebooting the Max line, but it's all changing.
I feel like they kind of let it.
Are they pussifying?
They didn't care.
No.
They kind of just let it go and didn't really take advantage, I think, of the line previously. They had things that fell into Max, but I don't think they branded it.
It was
like
all,
they didn't.
You know.
Squadron Supreme that screwed up Max line, I think. Because they had that book in the Max line, and then it was selling so well that they wanted to try and make it sell more. Mm-hmm. And so then,
well, I think this will be a really good attempt for them to really brand it as something like really aggressive.
Well,
like,
kind of what I'm saying is that it's not Punisher Max or Nick Fury Max.
It's just
it's Max, and it really is feeling like they're trying to make their Vertigo line now, and not with.
Yeah,
I
mean, if
Marvel
you like
iconic characters,
it's like instead of being like, if you like the Punisher, you'll like this even more. It's like if you like this Max book, you'll like this other Max book. Where previously, I think that didn't translate quite as well in the Max books. It wasn't necessarily such a clean.
It was like
move
the dirty
one.
Stepchild of the Marvel
Yeah,
line.
They just didn't brand it like Vertigo has done so well, you know.
Yeah, and Vertigo has really become its own. Love and Capes is coming back for a special holiday issue. Have you guys checked out Love and Capes before?
I was on the website checking it out, and number one's available on there. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, and that's you know why I thought it was good and very accessible for listeners to check out is because you can go to www.loveandcapes.com.
I love humor.
And check that entire first issue out.
If you like humor, the next story you're going to love.
All right.
Sorry.
Oh, the Mad Magazine.
Yeah, that is a ridiculously talented group of people they have on that.
Well, it's all the, you know, DC guys that, or is it?
Which I've always thought was kind
Mad. Mad's owned by DC, right?
Yeah, the same. I've always thought it was interesting that Mad never really has dug into that as much as they should have. Like in a way, like
yeah, they always stayed with the Lampoon, you know, kind of
or. I mean, Mad has always been, they've always had extremely, really, actually really good artists doing their stuff that have always captured the sort of humor side. But I always thought, since it became aware to me that they're owned by the same people as DC, I've always been like, why haven't they just, you know, asked someone from DC to do something one time?
Because some Mad stuff and
Sometimes humor even works even better if you don't have, you have good, you know, you have these people that are very good, like Sergio or various people that do that sort of humor style. What if you brought someone in that wasn't a humor style but wrote a funny story involving it, you know, like sort of stretch things out?
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool, actually, and I think you'd get people to come over from the comic side.
Which I think that's why
this is a really cool opportunity.
With
Mignola, Kevin Nolan, Humberto Ramos, Bocello, John Cassaday, Terry Dodson, Glenn Fabry, and Sam Keith, I think I'm going to pick that issue
When I was
up.
A kid... I bought Mad Magazine religiously, and a lot of my knowledge of old movies is based not upon actually seeing the movies, but reading the Mad Magazine,
If I remember correctly, it was Mad Magazine that really got me into comics, actually. I think that I was reading Mad before I was reading comic books. And
that's probably true for, about the same time for me. But I
think it was right before I started, and that's kind of transitioned me. Yeah. Oh, there was some great stuff in Mad Magazine when you're
still
12.
Well, another magazine is Entertainment Weekly, and
is that the Entertainment Weekly? What's the Entertainment Weekly theme?
That's Entertainment Tonight.
Oh. I get them all confused.
That is a television show. It's different from a magazine.
Oh.
But they're actually going to have a 7-page preview of Action Comics number 844.
That's the Geoff Johns, Richard Donner.
Entertainment Weekly is a very comic-friendly magazine.
Yeah. They have become so. They do a lot
Which
of comic
great,
book stuff, especially on their website.
I'm always seeing reviews or creator interviews, that kind of stuff through Entertainment Weekly.
Justice League of America number 2 had a big blurb from Entertainment Weekly on the top of it saying, you know, how awesome.
Are they owned by DC? Maybe
Entertainment Weekly. I don't think. Nah, maybe. I don't know.
Warner Brothers might own this.
But Entertainment Weekly is. I feel has become even more aggressive about covering comics.
I think it's kind of cool that John's, you know, because he interned for Donner for years, and then now he's, you know, he said they always talked about
doing a
story. He always had another Superman story, and so he kind of convinced him. But I thought the interesting thing was he calls him Dick Donner.
Dick Donner.
Not Richard, he calls him Dick Donner.
Well, it's one
Dick
of those
Donner.
Things where I think when you read the people talk about it and when they're really excited about it, you can kind of get excited about it when, because you can tell when a writer's like, oh, I just got to sign this and it'll be okay.
Right.
You know, and then you have writers who are like, oh, just, you know.
Yeah,
like,
you got to get this out. I have to get this out of my head.
You can pick up the enthusiasm from what.
Well, Donner, I mean, you know, you look at the first two Superman films, especially the first one. I mean, it's still, you know, he told a better Superman story than 75-80% of comic books that have ever been published, you know, and made that character more iconic than I think anything else.
He took Superman and he took all the funny and fun parts of it, but didn't make it ridiculous and didn't make it laughable.
Yeah.
You know, which I think is really great.
And while they're saying this isn't supposed to be Superman 3 or Superman Returns, it I think if you read between the lines, it kind of may be. So.
Their spin on it. Dark Horse, more Dark Horse news. Not manga, but movies. They're going to be releasing The Art of Making 300 this coming January. And it'll be $24.95.
I think we've lost Frank Miller from the comic book world, man. He's all Hollywood now.
That looks amazing.
Yeah.
The movie, I got guys that I are like, you know, real rare comic. I mean, they don't read comics or stuff, but have seen the trailer of that thing and are all.
300 looks really cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it looks like the book. I mean, it's unbelievable how, you know, they're doing a Sin City with it. You know, it's very real, very faithful to the book.
So. And actually, Dark Horse has already issued the updated hardcover version of the 300 graphic novel. So you got $30 to drop on that. High recommendation. So.
For $30, yeah, I'll pick it up.
It's
13x10, 88 full page color.
Next three stories are all kind of interesting here. The first one is Alias Comics and their announcement that they are no longer going to produce secular comics.
Interesting, because when I hear the term I'm going to publish Christian comics, I wonder what really counts.
What does that mean?
I mean, what is it? And it's not like me being like, oh, Alias Comics, we're going to become all religious. It's like a curious thing to me to have a genre necessarily completely when, you know, Superman is the ultimate messiah figure. You know?
That's kind of what struck me. It's like, well, what does that mean for the books? How are they changing the books? I don't even understand. And one of the things that I got from the original article was... Brett, I can't think of his last name, the owner of Alias.
Berner.
He had, you know, kind of cited, as he was saying, well, there's a lot of great literature and stories that were told in this form, in Christian literature.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe,
Chronicles of Narnia. Sure.
And when I read that, I'm like, wow. I mean, when I was a kid, I loved those books. I read them, you know, half a dozen times each. And... yet I never connected that with a Christian book. Now, as an adult, I can look at it and go, yeah, it certainly has Christian themes mm-hmm. in there, but it also has pagan themes and, you know, Greek mythology and, you know, a lot of different themes in it. And I know that C.S. Lewis was a very religious man and a Christian later on in his life, but I never looked at it like he was intentionally... trying to produce something that was Christian, per se.
No, now like his stuff like the Screwtape Letters or, oh gosh, I'm trying to think of the other one, that kind of the companion piece to Screwtape Letters. But, it wasn't an out-and-out Christian work. And I think with Alias, probably what they're trying to say is that their programming, so to speak, you know, to use a TV term, is going to be more Christian value. It's going to be I just picture it being more like Seventh Heaven comics.
That's what kind of I don't want to say it disturbs me, but that's what I kind of sit there and go because it's like now we're actively going to promote a certain sort of moral values in our comic books.
Well, I think, and this is just my gut reaction to it, is that they're probably looking at more of a distribution than a creative You know, if you say, you know, Alias Comics are Christian comics, now you've opened that up to send comic books to every Christian bookstore in the country, every large scale church, you know, Christian church, which have bookstores in them.
It's a branding decision.
It is. And it's like our comics are approved to sell in your business. And a company the size of Alias to switch gears and say, okay, we have trouble getting into comic shops in the existing distribution mechanics, that the model that's out there. But there's this whole other book distribution system that just by saying that we are Christian comics, then we're almost guaranteed to get into at least half of
that. That's more nefarious
than... I think part of the problem is that we wish comic book publishers weren't so mercenary. You know, like I think that is it.
How about just write good comics? And
I think that's know, I think I don't know. I think that's the part that maybe might disturb people, is they don't want to imagine that whatever company they like buying, or they buy one book from them, that they could switch because they think they'll make more money. Something, because everyone wants to imagine everything in comics is a labor of love, and a lot of it is, but
a lot of times it's
sometimes.
But from the publishing side, from the creation side, I think yes. From the publishing side, they have to make money.
You know what we should talk to is the Revere guys, because that's an Alias book. And
oh wow, you're right, Ed Lavallee and Grant Bond. I tell you what, let's move on to the next two stories. Are really about censorship and morals and values and all that stuff. First of all,
are you afraid to talk about these issues?
I'm not afraid to talk about these issues, but I don't want to come off as being far left or far right, because I'm neither.
I am far left, and
I'm not afraid to say.
Not afraid.
You know, well, I think a lot of comic.
Yeah.
I think a lot of comic fans get thrown into this pile of, oh, comic fans are all liberals.
Yeah.
And not that that's a bad word, because I'm a Democrat. I'll say it. You know.
Just not a liberal?
I don't want my arguments to be automatically dismissed because I'm thrown into the pile of all comic fans are
liberals. Well, that's why
liberals.
We need to talk about it.
Yeah. But we don't have... We're basically all liberals here, and there's no one that's going to give the dissenting argument of,
well,
you know what, there's
I
smut
can.
In comic
oh,
books.
Oh, I think you may be surprised, my friend.
Well, you just like to argue.
No, but that may be true, but that's not necessarily always my opinion, is just like the liberal view.
Well, I think here's the thing. I think there's a, especially with the library case, there's a compelling argument for community standards
right.
with libraries, but I also think they're... I mean, it's interesting, because last week we had a big discussion about the Dracula,
mm-hmm.
the Tomb of Dracula
mm-hmm.
thing, and I think there's an interesting line between these stories and the Tomb of Dracula about who is doing the censorship and who is saying that you can't read it.
Right.
Because I think a library is a place of sort of, you know what I almost said?
Edutainment.
of education.
It's like the end.
And I think... The only thing that concerns me really about the library case is the idea that people think that sort of education has to be, like, they don't want to be challenged at all. But I think that's, a library is a place for that. And it's not like Blankets is
but at the
shelved
same time,
next to Berenstain Bears.
But at the same
you know?
Time, a community has the right to, like, police their own community, don't they?
Yeah, but what if it's 51-49% and the 49% want to be able to read Blankets or the, you know, Communist Manifesto? Or
you live in America, man, and that's
democracy.
So they have to leave. Wait, so they have to leave. There's nothing saying that those 51% of the people that don't want their kids to read it couldn't just go with their kids to the library, or couldn't ask for those books to be shelved in a mature reader section.
Certainly.
Or couldn't
and all those issues came up in that story. I'm just saying, you know, it's like there's, to me, there, a lot of times, like you're talking about with censorship, it's like, immediately, a story like this ignites opinions about, well, you know, it's art, or it's, you know, it's this or that and the other, or, you know, it has the right to be there, the freedom of speech, and all these different issues. And it's like, yeah, but you know what? If you live in a town and that town decides they want to
take that out of their library, they have every right to do so, regardless of what I think, living, you know, in Chicago, what I think should or shouldn't be in a library. They have the right to do that.
But what is the purpose of a library? Is the purpose of the library to be the Barnes and Noble?
No, it's to serve the community.
Is blankets, what books are in the Barnes and Noble? What books are in any bookstore
well,
in
that's,
that
town? That's retail.
Do they go and demand that you take any...
Sometimes.
I don't know. You tell me what a library is for.
Well, like I said, I don't...
You tell me if the library is supposed to be for... You're telling me that 50.1% of people vote, and that means I can't go get blankets out of the library? The library serves me because I pay taxes.
It serves your community, not just you as an individual.
We don't live in a commune.
It serves
we don't.
Well, but that's what a local library
but
in
the
a town,
library view you
it,
ser- do.
It serves.
So you know
community.
What you do? So everyone has to move into a town where everyone agrees with them to get the books they want out of the library?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. I guess. I mean, no.
Is that what we've come down to? Is that the only solution?
That's how local government works, though. You live
so
in a community.
So you can't just tell me that you're
going to
put blankets in a mature reader section, and some kid is going to wander through
and get
it. I'm
not talking about rationales of what you're going to do in your...
But you just said that if 50.1% of the readers want blankets to be out of the library, then that's the community decision.
Okay, but here's the here's the next step there.
But it's also the library's decision.
And it's just like the Gordon Lee case, is that a comic basically got into the hands of a minor that it probably shouldn't have, all right? But if you take blankets and you put it in the library and it leaves the mature reader section and it gets misshelved somewhere else in the library, is the library then liable for having smut or whatever?
Why
some
even have a
wackos
library then? Why even have anything beyond children's books at that point? Why challenge
because people
anyone's
are
ideas?
Crazy, Tom. And you know what? There's no answer that we're going to get.
The good thing is, though, if you read the story, people in the library and the people in the community they don't all agree with this one woman. This is one woman who is saying, "I want
when
this removed."
The things she said were really legitimate. Like seedy people will be moving into the town.
Yeah,
like,
well,
that's just
she's
fucking
obviously
crazy.
But at the same time, and like I said, I'm not talking about necessarily
she,
this.
She ran out of Family Feud.
But I don't always agree with a library should carry porn because that's what that's what one guy in the community wants.
No, but
that's the same point though. You may be one person in the community, or 48% or 49.9%
but
of the
community.
But wait,
so you're saying the library should carry porn if 51% of people in the community wanted it?
Yes. Yes.
All right, then. Great, I'm going to move to that town.
Well,
thing is, people want to say there's no difference between blankets and pornography is bullshit. There is
one. Oh, there is.
To say that there is no line between them.
I don't disagree with that. I'm not saying that at all.
If you can't tell the difference,
that's where common sense comes in. And a lot of times the people that are like so, violently opposed to something like blankets, they don't have the common sense of being able to look at it and go, this isn't smut.
I will almost guarantee you that Louise Mills did not and has not read blankets.
Oh,
I guarantee
not.
She hasn't spent much
she
time
has
in
no
the
idea.
Library.
You're probably right. All right. Well, no, I mean, there's no doubt that this is a ridiculous case.
Yeah.
I was just bringing up the point that it's not always... It's not...
No, and there is room for compromise.
You know,
but I also think there's...
Yeah,
there's a place my favorite one,
and this is another...
I'm not one of the people that just think that everything should be available to everyone, just because that's...
I guess the counter-argument, though, would also be... That a lot of times when people make that argument, though, a lot of people use that to say, if not everything should be available to everyone, then we should get to decide everything that's available. I mean, because a lot of times people make the argument, but they never draw a line at any point and say, this is where... And I'm not saying that's true about you. I'm just saying I hear a lot of people make that argument, and they never say the point where they're willing to say...
Well, I'll say the point of how the Constitution, or not the Constitution, but how Congress has drawn the line that... You know, pornography is something that has no artistic merit. That's pretty easy to judge by something.
You know it when you see it.
That's right. Exactly.
If you masturbated to it, it's pornography. Has anyone masturbated to blankets? I think that's the question. I hope not.
I fucking hope not.
I can't wait till Lost Girls gets in the
challenge.
The Missouri
that
Library.
Will be interesting.
That ain't ever getting down there.
No, that's true.
Are you kidding me?
Gordon, and that is pornography. It just might be well-written pornography, but it is pornography.
True. I'll agree.
Gordon Lee, do we want to talk about the other...
He's back in court again.
We've talked about this previously.
Go to the CDBLF if you want.
He's kind of getting dicked over.
Good
luck.
In a related story, I'd actually seen this on a forum, may have been our forum, about the library deal, that there's actually a guy who has made a protest or filed paperwork to get Fahrenheit 51 thrown out of a library.
For book burning. He wants... Yeah.
No.
He wants to burn it?
He wants it thrown out of the library because it contains foul language. Fahrenheit 51, which is a book about people burning books. And so I just thought the irony...
See, that's the thing with these
things.
That's the thing with these things is that too often it gets put into a situation where either you completely agree with it or you don't agree with it. And no one ever wants to draw a line, but realistically in real life you draw a line.
I will. Draw me a line. You know what? Send it to me. I'll make the decision.
I'll decide.
Just make me emperor of all artistic content.
I mean, that's real life, so whatever.
Send it to Jimmy Palmiotti. He'll tell you if it's porn or not.
It's not enough nips.
Not enough nibbles. It's cold in New York.
All right, Ellis on Thunderbolts.
We already talked about that.
Done. That's the news.
All right, that's the news, everyone.
Now it's time for
Top of the Stack. That's right, it's Top of the Stack, our chance to let you, the listener, know what we, the panel, have been reading for the last week. Top of the Stack is brought to you by Athena of Altair, the collected webcomics, coming in December from Ape Entertainment. What mysteries lurk in a monastery hidden in the Himalayas, and who or what protects those secrets? And why is the daughter of Dracula after Athena of Altair? This 96-page trade paperback collects the entire run of the Eisner Award-nominated online adventures for the first time ever in print, as well as sketches, pinups, and more. Planetary/Authority co-creator Warren Ellis describes the pulp-inspired series as, if The Mummy and Van Helsing were actually, good. Athena of Altair, the collected webcomics, is available from Diamond Distributors and can be ordered with the following code, OCT063122. All four issues of the first Athena of Altair miniseries, Flight of the Falcon, can also be ordered through Diamond. Athena of Altair, High Adventure Takes Flight this December. So, thank you, Steve Bryant, and everyone at Athena of Altair.
Huzzah!
I love Steve Bryant.
He is a good guy. That's Steve Bryant.
He emails me every other day, he listens to the show and there'll be something. He keeps bitching at me because every time I talked, we talked to Brubaker and then I talked to Rucka, and both times I was pitching them the Invader stuff, and neither time did I pitch them him as the artist.
I'll do it. What a dick move.
and I'm like,
I'll do it.
Don't worry, Steve. That's phase two of the plan.
He can submit his art to
Jimmy Palmiotti.
I'm sure he'll do that Monday afternoon. All right, guys. Who would like to go first with their Top of the Stack?
I'll go first.
Go for it.
As is traditional.
Go talk.
You got some porn you're reading?
Yes.
From your library?
From my library.
Check this out from the library.
51% of my community decided that Playboy was a book. I picked The Other Side from Vertigo by Jason Aaron and Cameron Stewart. It is a Vietnam War book, which actually is also the only book I've ever read where I hated for the first four or five pages, and then something happened that completely changed the way I thought about it. This book very much starts off as pretty much Full Metal Jacket, but in comic book with a Vietnamese guy.
Boot camp or post-boot camp?
Boot camp. It kind of goes that way, and then at a certain point, I don't think this won't spoil anything because this I think it would be really hard. Everyone knows how Vietnam ends up. we're not happy about it. So it's not. This isn't a real happy book. So I don't think I'm going to spoil anything for you. But the guy all of a sudden sees he sees a ghost of a soldier, and his gun starts talking to him, and his gun starts telling him stuff like, "I want to fuck you in the ass," and stuff like that. And that was enough for me to be like, "Wow, this is really interesting."
I'm going to go give this to my library.
But also, this book could very much completely fall apart within one issue.
Oh, great.
Like this, but I don't know. I'm really intrigued. I read it twice, and I was like, yeah, I do kind of like this. But this book is walking that very thin line right now where it could become really cliche or really out there and miss it, you know, miss everything it could do. But right now it's doing it really well. So
how many,
this first
it's a
issue,
mini-series,
it's like
right?
5 issues.
5 issues. So it's got plenty of time to
it's got plenty of time to completely fall apart. But this first issue I enjoyed. It was unsettling. And the art was really good, and it showed us...
Crap, I wasn't going to pick it up because I have, like, no interest in a Vietnam
it
story
took
for
me,
some reason.
It showed me just enough that I was like, this is really interesting. The first four pages, I was like, I saw Full Metal Jacket. And I was like, yeah, this is boring. And then it showed that it used comic books, actually. It used the comic book medium properly. It wasn't just a rehash of a movie, and it showed me something. It showed talking maggots, and I was like, okay. And it showed a word balloon coming up from a gun, and I was like, okay, well, this is really a comic book. This isn't just a rehash of a movie.
But at the end of those four pages, did you go online and start bitching about
it? No, I put it down, and I was like, God, this is boring. I watched Project Runway. And then at the end of it, I picked it
all
up
all credibility
again.
Lost.
And I picked it up again, and I started reading. I'm like,
what is
oh,
your
wait.
Fascination with Project Runway?
My girlfriend likes it, and I'm hooked. I'm telling you.
If Jason Aaron was listening to this podcast, he just
you
turned
call
it
me
off.
A panty sniffer.
We actually met Jason. met Jason in Wizard World. Really, really nice
Who's
guy.
He?
We had lunch with him.
Who is he?
He wrote it.
I was going to steal his
book.
Pizza. So that's the book he was working on.
Yeah.
Jason,
congratulations. Oh, no, I definitely have to
bet. You're walking currently a very thin line between
suck
being,
and good.
Well, between being way out there and being really trite, and you've done a really good job so far of not
following
either one.
This is one of the Kansas City guys.
Yeah. I remember Jason.
Yeah, whenever we were talking to Andy Parks a couple weeks ago, and Andy wasn't able to talk with us because he was out with Tony Moore and Jason Latour and Jason Aaron.
Oh,
so that's all one of those Kansas City guys.
All right.
Sal, you want? I tell you, what, I'll go.
Go ahead.
Let you finish up.
Do it.
Speaking of Andy Parks, this week was the debut issue of The Irredeemable Ant-Man by Robert Kirkman, Phil Hester, and Andy Parks. And this is not your father's Ant-Man. This is not the Hank Pym Ant-Man.
My father thought comic books were for fags.
This isn't your dad's Hank Pym.
No, actually, he kind of liked comic books. I'm just kidding.
Actually, Hank Pym is in the book. He's working with S.H.I.E.L.D. to develop their new Ant-Man suit.
In between beating his wife? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. But
let's pretend that didn't happen.
Oh, okay.
That was right. No. What I liked about this, and Tom, you can probably join in because I think you enjoyed this also.
I did.
What I liked about it is that
chopped liver?
Have you read it?
Yeah, I read
it. Okay. Well, let's all talk about it.
Did you enjoy?
I liked about it. This is a different look at inside S.H.I.E.L.D. that we usually don't get. S.H.I.E.L.D. is usually Nick Fury and then a bunch of guys with guns and jetpacks.
Yeah, and blue suits.
And this really looks, you know, inside the helicarrier.
I love the poker scene. When they were playing poker, that was great. Just the conversation about Nick Fury being a myth.
Nick Fury ain't real, man. which that would happen on the helicarrier. These guys, there would be all different ranks and guys that have crap jobs, even though they're S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and they're working their way up through the ranks. And
it'd be like any other bureaucratic, you know,
it would be like
paramilitary.
Any other, yeah.
Organization.
They're going to get
like
together.
The
they're going to play poker.
Yes,
they're
like
going to talk about this or that.
Weeblos.
and basically the characters that we get introduced to are a couple friends. It's Chris and Eric seem to be the two main characters, and you get to see Chris's relationship that he has with another S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, and then there's this whole Ant-Man project that they kind of stumble across. So I liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun. And Hester's art, I think we're seeing him flex some different muscles than he did in Green Arrow or Nightwing. And I like it.
Cool.
I enjoyed it too.
Can I tell you a funny story? I'm sorry, the whole Weeblos and Girl Scout thing. Yeah.
Oh boy, where are we going?
To do with the comics or anything, but
I killed a Boy
Scout
10 years ago.
I used to. The place I work at used to have like this every year it was like 12 people would send their kids in to sell Girl Scout cookies. Like every year it was
yeah,
the same. It was like
same.
And it just got to the point where I'm like, I can't afford to buy Girl Scout cookies from everyone's kid. It just, you know.
Do you make them all download the podcast?
No, but I.
Yeah, well, then fuck them.
Once
and their
kids. I told a kid that I couldn't buy Girl Scout cookies from her because I didn't believe in the paramilitary organization.
Like
training
it's a
militia.
Nice. Nice. Nice.
And this kid just looks at me like, what?
All right. My top of the stack is I finally started working my way through the gigantic stack of stuff that I picked up from Wizard World Chicago months ago. And this book I had actually read a little while ago, and I kept meaning to pick it because I really liked it.
You told me about this.
It's called Strange Detective Tales, and it's number one. It's from Odd God Press, and this is by a guy named Jesse Bausch and James Callahan. It's just a funny. It's a black and white book, real thick paper. I'm not sure who printed, you know, where they had this printed, but the paper quality is really it's really heavy. But I mean that has nothing to do with the story. But the story basically is it's set in 1958 Hollywood. And it's a fantasy world where different characters from classic horror movies are sort of reimagined as if they came to Hollywood to sell their stories. And they did, but they thought they'd get rich and famous from it, and they didn't. They end up kind of, you know, hard luck stories afterwards. And the two main characters are Dr. Volek, who is Igor, from the Frankenstein films, Universal films, and then Renfield from Dracula books and films and everything. And they decided, after they're, you know, couldn't make any money in Hollywood, they decided to open up a detective agency investigating all the crimes and weird stuff from the creeps, as they call it, all the other creeps that live in Hollywood. It's just a funny, really pretty book, horrifically pretty. It's the style, I have a hard time sort of describing it. It's very sparse lines, real clean, almost like, not cartoonish at all, but just a different style. And there's a lot of humor in it, and the first story, it opens up with them helping this lady and showing her pictures of her cheating husband, and it turns out he's cheating on another zombie, a fresher zombie. And then it goes from there to Igor being contacted by a friend whose his ex-girlfriend Mary has been missing, and he goes to try and find out where she's gone to, and you start to find out who she is. It seems that she I don't want to give it away, but Mary is, you can probably figure out who Mary is after reading the book a little bit. But overall, it was just real fun, real cool idea. I thought just something really original, great art, and there's two issues out now. If you go to their website, oddgodpress.com, there's actually like a 6 or 8 page preview online of it, and it's just really cool. I really liked it.
Do I get to borrow it?
Sure, absolutely.
You know, that's the second time this has been a top of the stack.
It was?
Yeah.
Who picked up before?
Ian Levenstein.
Oh, really?
That was Ian's top of the stack.
Oh, I
way
didn't know that.
Back. I think that was before Tom
yeah.
was a regular on the
no,
show.
No, I was on that episode.
Were you?
That was before I was.
That was the Company Men episode way
oh,
back
geez.
When. But yeah, Ian picked that as the top of the stack.
Oh, it's really good. I mean, it's, you know, it's something completely different. It's out of left field. And I mean, growing up, I was a huge fan of all those Universal horror films. Mm-hmm. And so it's right up my alley. But it's just I just thought
the most.
Yeah, baby. I just thought it was cool, and I wanted to give those guys some props.
All right, you know, we actually have another top of the stack, and
from whom?
There's no one here.
This is thank you so much, Trevor. This is the first person to take me up on the listener top of the stack and using our hotline. So this is from Trevor in Canada.
Hey, this is a hotline top of the stack for the week of October the 4th, 2006, and it's Trevor calling from Brampton, Ontario, Canada. My top of the stack this week is Doctor Strange, The Oath, the first in a 5-issue limited series.
It is good.
Being written by...
So good I couldn't buy.
Unfortunately, I had to flip pages now. Why did they never have the guys on the first page? Brian K. Bond does the story. Marcus Martin does the art. It is inked by Alvaro Lopez, colored by Javier Rodriguez, and lettered by Willie Schubert. It's pretty cool seeing Doctor Strange come back to the Marvel Universe. The last time he came back was in that 6-issue limited series done by Mr. Straczynski about a year or 2 years ago, and it was kind of a retelling, and I wasn't overly that fond of it. And I'm a huge Doctor Strange fan. Forgive my my fanboy moment there. The comic basically starts innocuously enough with Aranya and Iron Fist sitting in a sort of looks like a walk-in clinic for superheroes that is run by this person known as the Night Nurse. And
she's shown up before.
I love the Night Nurse.
Wong basically brings in Doctor Strange having been shot. And basically he gets operated on, and then the story develops. And without giving away too many spoilers, please forgive me if I'm giving away any, you find out that that Wong has an incurable illness, and that the doc is in the process of trying to find a mystical solution to said illness, seeing as his surgical skills are no longer viable. And in the process, he comes across a rather large, shall we say, cure. Mr. Bendis has done a great job of basically reintegrating Doctor Strange into the fold. I like how, you know, he did the obligatory, here's the history of the character, but he did it in a 2-page spread, which was basically all people really needed to know if they didn't know who Doctor Strange was, and not so much that those of us that are huge Doctor Strange fans and know exactly who Doctor Strange is can't stand it. The other cool element was the fact that a seemingly mundane guy was able to shoot the doctor. The specifics behind that are very unique, and I'll leave it for you to read the comic to determine. And it looks like a great beginning of a 5-issue series. The cover art, I'm thinking, is kind of a retro thing to go back to, like the 60s and 70s doc. Has very much of that very simple lineage and simple coloring. And when I looked at the cover, I wasn't overly impressed. But the interior artwork keeps me intrigued enough. It's also... it's not retro, but it certainly is fairly straightforward, and the coloring is very vivid and clear cut, and there isn't a lot of bleed or whatever. It looks to be a good beginning, and I'm really hoping that this 5-issue limited series keeps along the same pace as it has started, and that maybe it means that the doc may eventually come back. But you know, there's only about 8 of us that I think buy regular Doctor Strange comics, so they can't put a whole comic on that, despite my great joys. Anyways, thanks for the great podcast, guys, and keep it up. That's my top of the stack.
All right, cool.
Thank you.
Well, I know
Trevor.
Tom, you really liked.
Yeah, I did. I don't like Doctor Strange, and I thought it was great.
Cool.
Got it. So I have to read it this weekend.
Yeah, thanks, Trevor, for listening and for phoning in. That was
and
very
so
cool.
See if you have a top of the stack. Just call in. We'll
it's not like
it.
We're getting tons of them and we're just like, I don't want to play them. I just want you guys to participate.
Right. Speaking of call-ins and emails and whatnot, we do
have an
some.
Email?
Yeah. Why don't you read the one from Eric Houston?
All righty. Let me find it here. From Japanese. Eric Houston. Hey, guys. Congratulations on another great episode. I just thought I'd drop you a line to clue you in on that Tokyo dude and Turtles All the Way Down. Okay, this is the guy I was wondering. The phrase is from Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time. Jeez,
what?
I thought I had read that. In the book, Hawking tells a story about a famous scientist who gives a lecture about the Earth orbiting the sun. During the lecture, an old woman stands up and says, "You, sir, are full of crap. Everyone knows the Earth is a flat plate, balanced on the back of a giant tortoise." The scientist just smiled and said, "Then what is the tortoise standing on?" The woman replied, "Why, it's Turtles All the Way Down." What that has to do with anything, I have no idea. And of course, that dude from Tokyo could just be batshit crazy. Eric Houston. Well, thank you, Eric, for explaining that. I'm amazed that.
That was Ocean Druin's comment
on the Frapper.
Yeah, on the Frapper map was all.
And I had no idea what that meant. And I thought I had read that.
Well, being the geeks that we were, it was like, was he talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I had no idea.
Did Shredder ever say that to someone? Turtles all the way down. Mousers.
And here is our last hotline listener voicemail for the episode.
Chris, Sal, Tom, this is Stephen Orr, a.k.a. Stephen from the Boards, and I'm the host of Just Another Fanboy, the podcast that smells like cheese. As a matter of fact, I'm actually recording this week's episode number 6, as I speak, and I wanted to take a moment while I was recording to just blatantly sell my show on your show. So come on, all you listeners of Around Comics, take a moment or 30 and check out justanotherfanboy.com for all your comic book and dry cleaning needs. So now I finish with my anti-stealth mission to take over your internet airwaves and return you back to the capable and surprisingly smooth hands of Chris, Sal, and even Tom, the disembodied voices of Around Comics. I really do love your show, guys. Thanks for taking the time out of your lives each week to sit in a comic book store and talk comics. Of course, regardless of the show, you guys would probably be doing that anyway, right? That's all I have. I dare you to play this. I double dog dare you.
I've never stood
and listen to episode number 6 at justanotherfanboy.com and hear me take up my listeners' time with me, recording my voice for you. And me. See ya.
You know, I was going to take that.
We should call his show.
I don't think he does a voicemail thing yet.
Leave a message.
Yeah. I was going to take that message, and I was just going to bleep out every time he mentioned the name of his own show. Just to fuck with him.
For her.
But thanks for listening.
Thank you, Steve.
As I told him on the forum today, I said, you know, I just haven't had a chance to listen to his show yet.
It.
Have you?
Yeah, it's good? Pretty good.
Yeah? Yeah. What's he do? What kind of...
He talks about comic books.
Just by himself?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that's kind of sad.
Jesus Christ.
As we sit here at like 10:15 on a Friday night.
Well, at least there's more than one of us,
show.
Though.
That's true.
I'm going to check it out this weekend, I promise.
All right. Well, we've got another listener email from
Of course,
Alex.
I promised.
From
Chip,
Alex.
yeah, you better be
In
doing
my opinion, the best decade for comics was in the 80s. I can name a lot of good books that came during that period from both DC and Marvel.
Are you imagining this is what Alex sounds like?
I'm guessing. The question is, what are your favorite titles, books from the 90s? I believe that it's a period where both Marvel and DC destroyed their characters. I'm guessing he doesn't have any favorites. They're making comics interesting again. But what went wrong? Remember the Daredevil series when he changed costumes? I don't even want to remember the Heroes Reborn series, which I'm ashamed that I own. Or even waste my time bagging and boarding it.
Favorite titles, books from the 90s?
Probably, I think it was the 90s. One of my favorite books was... ongoing series was Archer and Armstrong from Valiant. I liked a lot of the stuff from Valiant, actually, in the 90s.
Since then.
You know, there was... Well, yeah, I wasn't going to go with... You know, obviously there was some real good stuff that came out in the 90s, but I was trying to think
most
of, like,
the stuff
ongoing...
Most of the stuff I bought in the early 90s was crap, and then I got out of comics until probably 98, so, I've got that whole, you know, like, dead zone of comics there.
I'm trying to remember.
I really liked the Mark Waid Flash during the 90s.
Yeah.
That was always one thing that was very consistent for me, even when everything else sucked.
I'm trying to think of what else.
When they were busy killing Superman.
I think I might have liked... What was going on in Green Arrow in the 90s? I don't remember. I don't know. There was...
That was the Mike Long, Flash.
Longbow Hunters.
I mean, I started reading a lot
80s,
of...
Right?
Late
80s.
Yeah.
I think Justice League was okay. Very... Well...
Intermediately?
For like 90, 91, but...
I'm trying... I mean, I was reading a lot more independent stuff.
Yeah,
like,
the 90s was a great decade for comics if you were not reading Marvel or DC. It was a great independent decade.
They killed
decade.
Superman.
Yeah,
that is
they
a
did.
Great story. I'm not going to ruin it for you.
You just did.
Oh, he comes back.
Oh.
They kill him and he comes back, but don't worry.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what else I was reading. Mage.
It's hard for me to remember
Badger.
What I was reading last week.
Badger. Yeah. Larry. Hello.
Bill Reinhold going to be here on Saturday.
Yeah, I know. That's the guy I was talking about. It's like I was
That would be a great discussion to have with Bill Reinhold because he was doing comics.
In the 90s?
In the 90s. So, yeah, that was a decade where he was pretty...
I don't know. I'm just getting a Badger sketch. That's all I know.
There you go.
Larry.
You know, I'd have to go back and look at a lot of stuff.
I think, like, Nexus, that was 90s, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Mage.
Love and Rockets.
Yeah, but well, I wasn't really reading it that much in that time. I actually read more of it later on. My store didn't carry it, and I didn't know about it until later on. God, I'm trying to... I don't know. I think there was some good Hulk stuff in the 90s.
Yeah, Peter David.
Peter David's Hulk was good. I don't know. I'm sure there was good stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
like
who
I said,
cares?
It's hard for me.
There's
to
really
remember,
good stuff, you know, now, so stuff. Just read comics.
We've got one more from Adam.
Adam says, "Hi, I am new to comic collecting. I have always had an interest in Marvel characters and DC characters. I wonder if you could give me some advice and tips on collecting." Sure, Adam. Don't collect, just buy what you want to read.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Don't collect. Collecting's a waste of time.
Read
comics. Don't collect them.
Yeah.
But if you want some advice on what to read, go talk to your local comic book shop, because there's so much stuff. It all depends on what you like. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine anybody walking to a comic shop and not being able to find something good that they would enjoy, that their personal taste would allow them to enjoy.
Take the Stephanie Mangold challenge. Go,
there you go.
Go look at that and see the 5 books that Sal suggested
for
Stephanie.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with any of those.
And start there. Pick
they are all good.
Jonah Hex.
Yeah, there you go.
Pick up Jonah Hex. That's good. I don't know. What do you like? Answer me.
Why won't you answer? Like the black bolt interview all over again.
Yeah.
Yelling at
someone. It's what our episode 18, Comic Books 101 with Chris Marshall.
Right.
I think that was episode 18.
I don't know.
Like that.
It's so long
ago. I thought it was episode 21.
Something
no,
like that.
21 was...
Oh God,
that was Matt.
We're such self-obsessed
asshole.
What episode was this one on?
Yeah, but that was an episode that we really covered a lot of that stuff, which was all collected
editions,
which makes it really
go
easy
listen
to
Chris
Marshall.
Chris Marshall's Collected Comic Book Library mm-hmm. podcast. He'll give you
comics
enough,
library.
He'll give you more to read than you could shake a dead rat at. I don't know.
Any dead rat?
Although,
around?
If you're going to collect comics, collect old comics, because they're kind of cool to have, and they're really expensive, so you won't probably be able to collect many. But
quarter bins.
I don't know. Yeah, look at that. Go to quarter bins. You can find
all kinds of old shit.
Just have fun.
Just email Tom.
And
he'll send you
a read what you like.
Old shit.
Old
garbage.
I wrote down here, I wanted to send out a huge thank you to Chris Somney. I got not only my commission in the mail, I'm going to grab it here.
He got a...
Chris sent
like a care package.
Yeah, he sends you this package of the commission, which was beautiful. But then he sends you like a little envelope inside with a note and then another sketch. And then he sends you a card with a sketch on it. Then he sends you this other... It's like the guy's obsessive compulsive. He can't see a piece of white paper and not draw on it.
Yeah.
He's got
Femforce, WizKids.
He's insane. Yeah, he sent us a bunch of stuff that he did, Femforce that he did, and
some promo cards.
The woman punching Hitler.
Yeah, baby.
Take that, anti-Semite.
WizKids.
But yeah, he sends this basically postcard that says, hey, thanks for the commission, and writes a nice note on it, and there are little doodles all around it, and then flip that over, Tom. He does this. No, flip it over. And he does this amazing head sketch of Paul Crocker from Queen and Country. And
you get your money's worth with a Chris Somney. That's for sure. No question.
What a hell!
Where's this bribery for us never to mention his first published work again?
And his nickname.
Is there a copy of Big Bang Comics number 10 from Chris Skippy Somni?
No, he didn't keep any of those. I don't think. Chris is a phenomenally talented artist, and a heck of a nice
and
kid.
Just a nice guy.
Kid, I call him a kid, but he's not a kid.
Yeah, he's got
sketch
this great
of Capote.
And
envelope,
scarf on there. So,
he's awesome.
So Chris, thank you so much. I love my commission, and anybody out there that is interested in getting commission art, go to chrissomney.com, chrissamnee.com,
and it's Somni like Omni.
Somni like Omni. I'm not joking. That's what he says.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. That's That's a wrap.
That's another episode. It's 49. Yeah. I can't believe we've been doing this for that long.
I know.
My God. Oh, well.
Episode 50.
Surprised.
Would like to let everyone
surprised
know?
Surprised to what? You're still here?
Lasted this long.
Oh.
The beginning of the episode was about the end of it for me.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you, Chris, you've been replaced by...
with a robot. A Japanese robot.
Japanese
Hello, I am Chris.
Oh, I just like to get out of
here. I like Greg Rucka.
I know.
I like Greg Rucka.
My queen and country.
That's, you know, if you were going to replace me, that would be the way to do it.
Interesting that you mentioned books. Have you read Queen and Country?
By the way, have you ever read Queen and Country?
We are now proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. The CPN is a collection of some of the best comic book podcasts on the net. You can learn more about the network and find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com.
Edit the program it to nod its head when you're talking to it, but then completely ignore anything you say.
I will ignore
Thank
it.
Thank you
no
again
plans.
To the forum this week. You guys were great. Everyone who posted questions for Jimmy Palmiotti, we really appreciate it. Just so everyone is aware, we post next week's topic on Tuesdays at our forum at aroundcomics.com. So if you want to get a leg up on what we're going to talk about or give us some input on the forum, that is how you do it.
Thank you for your questions.
We are proud
listener LCS challenge.
Comic podcast
alley, iTunes music reviews.
I'm proud friends of Greg Rucka.
Thank you to tomorrow's
right reviews.
Publishing. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today, or at least Jimmy Palmiotti.
And we'll be everywhere.
Thank you, Jimmy, for talking to us.
Everyone have a fantastic week.
Jimmy,
we'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. Please, if you're in the Chicago area, come on out to Dark Tower on Saturday, October 14th from 2 to 5 for our Chicago Minicom. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in...
And around.
And around. Comics.
Replacement robots.
Jesus.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week. With a panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.